start the meeting. We're going to start the meeting. There are two things that we are supposed to clarify to honorable members. The one thing is about eating. That the speaker has written us a letter to say he is organizing biscuits and sugar and milk and coffee. He no more sends sandwiches and everything to portfolio committees. And those biscuits and sugars and what will only arrive at 10:30. That's the decision of the speaker. Now, David is very aware it's recession time, so it means there's no time for sandwiches, and we will cut down on our budget in Parliament. That's what the opposition is demanding. And the speaker has done that very successfully. So your biscuits and everything will be here at 10:30. But I'll be innovative for Utata to find something to eat for you because I know that you're a little bit hungry. So I'll ask them to go and take something where I was so that you can have something to eat. Special treatment to you alone as a veteran. Yeah. David, we don't have to discuss food now, please. Man. Okay.
Chair, I fully support the speaker's austerity measures, but I would ask the chair if he could perhaps appeal to his colleagues in Kisatu and ask them if they could possibly wake up earlier in the morning so that we could receive the tea and biscuits at 9 o'clock rather than at 10:30. Thank you.
Derek, those are not defense matters. Can we leave that one? Those are not defense matters. And then the second part is the minister of our department, she's in London, she's not around in town, she's part of the delegation of the president. And the deputy minister is present here, who most of the time will apply his ears and give me guidance wherever he thinks he should help, but he can't interfere with parliament. But overall, we are having our Mr. Deputy Minister, who is going to be here with us the whole day, to come and listen to us and exactly hear what is happening. But the presentation will be done by the officials of the department who will take us through. We do have apologies from IFPPC and two members of the ANC, Satu Tiare and Mamum Kabate. Mamum Kabate will arrive a little bit later week, but overall, everybody is aware about the meeting itself. So before we really start the process of the presentation that we will be told by the department, because we have seen in the papers that there are changes in the head of the department, who heads what. But I'll leave that to the deputy minister if he thinks he's got the information to give us the information. No, I don't want to open it first. You're not a deputy minister. I must give the deputy. You can't want to run the executive as if you're elect. The people are appointed to do that. We'll give him the opportunity first. Good morning, Tatu. Unruf. How are you? No, you must first sit down. Then I can conclude that you are fine. Okay. This is military? Yeah, good. Very good. Very good. Good morning, Tatu. Yeah. Deputy Minister, this is our committee meeting. We have two issues on our committee meeting. It is about the start the process of the budget vote and the process of the staff plan. We know, honorable members, that we're supposed to finish up on the annual report. We'll come back to that one after we have heard what is. But we were asked by the ministry in our own interaction that they seem to be ready because the deputy president have asked them to finish up the issues of the strat plan, and they asked us to prioritize the strat plan so that by today all ministers are being expected to present the strat plan to parliament, and they said that they wanted us to take us through that particular one. So out of good wisdom, I thought, let's do that so that we can be able to have the strat plan and we could all be reflecting what is it and what is the vision of the minister itself. So the strat plan was only submitted yesterday to you, but will allow the department as much to take you through the strat plan and you can raise your views. Deputy Minister, without going on for a very long time, can I give you an opportunity?
Chairperson, thank you very much and good morning to honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans, and officials of the department here present, led by the acting Secretary for Defense. In a way, Chairperson, in the comments you have just made, you have covered what I understood to be my assignment this morning, to introduce this very big delegation of the department before the Portfolio Committee. In my entire life as a member of parliament, as a lawmaker, I have never seen such a big delegation of a department appearing before a committee of parliament. I trust that this is an indication of the preparedness of the department to bring up all the information that may be called for in our today's business, and I hope we succeed in that. Chairperson, honorable members, allow me to indicate, the chair has said that the Minister of Defense, Honorable Minister Sisulu, is not here. She's part of the state visit by the President to the United Kingdom. She was ordinarily going to be in this meeting today, and she has asked me to tender her sincere apology for her absence today. It is an important meeting, as the agenda suggests. Honorable Chair, the department is presenting to the committee today the strategic plans for the department for the year 2010-2011 to the financial year 2012-2013. That is to say, the strategic plans for our medium-term expenditure framework work. We should apologize, Chair, to committee members that the documentation for this meeting was not made available on time for adequate perusal by members. That's Bedibare who Rishida Rishachevich. It's many things happening all at the same time, trying to get everything, you know, done. Even as we are busy improving and fine-tuning some of the things that we are presenting to you today. But we hope that in our presentation we'll be able to give the Portfolio Committee a fair picture of what these plans entail. Chairperson, thank you very much. May I hand back to you? Or before, my apology. I should have made the point, Chair, as you said, that the department's delegation is led by the newly appointed acting SecDef, a person who you know, who has worked with the Portfolio Committee before in his previous duties as Chief of Operations, that is General Matanzim. He has been appointed as the acting SecDef by the Minister because of the decision by Cabinet last week to appoint our former acting SecDef as the new DG of the Department of Military Veterans. Honorable Mr. Mutumi, our former SecDef is now the DG of the Department of Military Veterans, and we should maybe take this opportunity to congratulate him in his new duties and wish him well in his assignment. The acting secretary will be in charge of the department's presentation. Chair, thank you very much.
Can we welcome first the new acting DG, the new acting secretary, and also welcome Mr. Mdumi to his new position. And can you be patient? We welcome them to their new positions. But I do know that most of the presentation, if I'm correct, DM, will be done by the old Secretary of Defense.
You're right. Actually, the new acting sector has just arrived back from the UK because he was part of that delegation. He's just arrived back, and he's of course going to be assisted in his duties today by the former acting secretary in presenting this report. Thanks.
Thank you for that one. Can we also accept the apology of the minister that she couldn't make it here? And we do hope to make use of the opportunity of the presentation. On which one are you? Do you want to come in, David?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to put a question to the Deputy Minister concerning the appointment of General T.T. Matanzima. First, let me say that I welcome.
Can you ask that privilege from me? Because I'm running the meeting. He's not running the meeting. No. Unless I understand what is it that you want to get clarity about. I thought that it's an introduction. And we will go on with what is the business of the day. And then within the business of the day, if your matter does come up, you put it there, rather than putting it up as a different matter at all. Because I'm just taking that the Deputy Minister is introducing the gentleman in front of him, you see. I don't know what is the issue that we want to raise in relation to this one.
Chair, the issue that I'd like to raise is the issue of civilian control of the military.
Let's leave it there. Let's just leave it there. I don't think it's a matter that we should really get into it. Do you want to say something?
No,
thank you. Yeah, no, let's leave it there. Let's deal with issues that are in front of us. The issue in front of us is to get a report from the new acting Secretary of Defense being assisted by the old Secretary of Defense. That's right. Can we give you the opportunity, sir, to say something to us?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, our Deputy Minister. As agreed with my colleague and also taking into account the fact that this report was prepared under his guidance, we have asked him to take the members, honorable members of the committee, through this presentation. He will be doing so, assisted by the director, Nandi Saluma. Thank you very much. Can I hand over to you?
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members. We are presenting to you the 2010 to 2013 a strategic plan of the Department of Defense, and we will basically cover the scope that will be what the aim of this presentation is, what decisions we require of the portfolio committee, and then get into the detail of the outlook and overview of the strategic plan for 2010 and the layout of the plan, and then into the detail of the chapters per program, and have concluding remarks. Our presentation is going to be divided into two parts, but integrated. This is the first part. The other part will, of course, within what is in the scope, deal with the financials and allocation, financial allocation per program within the budget as handed down by the Minister of Finance 2 weeks ago. In terms of the strategic plan outlook for this,
can I just verify? Are you using this document?
Yes.
Can I check with members? Do you have this small document in front of you? That's the document. There is a bigger strategic plan that has been submitted today. So it goes along with this one. You'll get more substance from this one. I know that there was one that was on your email that was also there. We will work out as we go towards finalization to exactly which document are we using as a discussing document. Because we've got quite a number of documents. Is this one the one that was on the email that you sent to Parliament? Is this the one? Just to get clarity so that I can be sure about what members.
Yes, what we are presenting is what you have in your hand.
Okay, that's right. So we'll be using this one, Honourable Members, and we'll see which one is the right one. But can you go ahead? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. So our plan is the culmination of the planning and budget seminar process, which we had already kick-started in October 2008 and submitted the plans in April 2009. And of course, during that occasion, we evaluated technically the service and division plans through the DPBEC. That is an acronym for the Departmental Planning, Budget and Evaluation Committee, during June 2009, after which we then made sure that there were amendments to include the priorities in November 2009 and finally submitted in January 2010. Ahead of the Cabinet Lekgotla, with further account on consideration of the estimates of national expenditure and the pending budget cuts. That's already indicated in the letter of allocation during that time. The main three chapters of the strategic plan have got performance in information that we now attach as appendices to the main report. And these three cover the strategic overview, the alignment of the Department of Defense with government and Minister of Defense priorities, as well as the translation of the Department of Defense mandate into defense outputs as elucidated in Vote 21, as handed down by the Minister of Finance during the budget as part of the estimate of national expenditure. And then, of course, furthermore, in compliance with the Public Finance Management Act, Section 52, to have a brief overview of the entities that report to our executive authority, that is the minister, and those the entities you'll see at the end are the Armaments Corporation, AMSCO, as well as the Castle Control Board. And then, of course, finally, the overview of the public-private partnerships that we are involved in. And then, furthermore, the contents we continue to align with the requirements of the strategic plan as required in the Treasury regulations, as well as the guidelines from the Public Service and Administration Department. Also, whatever guidelines the Auditor General puts in as interpretation of the Treasury regulations. And then also we have had extensive iterative processes within the department with respect to the strategic plan, primarily as the Defense Staff Council, as well as the Council on Defense. The Council on Defense is the structure of the minister that is chaired by the minister and the deputy minister, the secretary for defense, and the chief of the defense force sit therein. The minister confirmed the priorities for this period of the 2010 to 2013 as part of the strategic plan, and to go into the detail of that, you'll see in pages 23 to 24 of the strategic plan. And basically, the priorities are confirmed as follows. Firstly, the establishment of a fully functional entity to support the military veterans, so to speak, a Department of Military Veterans. Secondly, rejuvenation and upgrading of the landward program. Members will recall that this is not the first time this appears here. It has appeared in our previous strategic plan as one of the key priorities that the focus should now move towards the upgrading of the landward program. And then thirdly, the review of the Defense Secretariat so as to align it with the mandate for the defense organization and support requirements for the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. And then fourth, upgrade of the Department of Defense infrastructure. This is not a new priority as identified. It is a matter that we are seized with, and we continue to engage other stakeholders as well. And then fifth, the Department of Defense Works Regiment, as one of the minister's priorities. That has been established already, but it's also a priority to go into full execution of the Department of Defense Works Regiment. And then also the establishment of the National Defense Force Service Commission and its supporting structures. Members will recall that during October last year, the minister presented to yourselves the interim National Defense Force Service Commission. It is the intention that that interim National Defense Force Service Commission becomes a permanent establishment as part of the defense establishment. So that is also a priority. And then also the transformation of AMSCO to be in line with the defense mandate. Furthermore, incremental and progressively refocusing the NEL to support identified defense strategic capabilities. In this regard, it will be recalled that the minister did allude to this point during the maiden defense budget speech in terms of the intention with respect to the NEL. So it is also a priority of the minister. And then also promote a culture of good governance through firstly, realization of a qualification-free audit through a multi-pronged approach that addresses the root causes of the Auditor General's qualifications of the Department of Defense, and then also information technology. And then furthermore, optimal utilization of the collateral value that the defense capabilities has to respond to the country's socioeconomic needs. In this regard, as part of a cooperative governance, to work with other entities of government, be it at national, provincial, or local government tiers. And then furthermore, the defense strategy that responds to the DoD's current and emerging needs, it's important that this is finalized, especially given that this is the new administration, the new parliament. So that is also a priority. And then the penultimate point, the revitalization of the reserves. And then lastly, to provide leadership to the development and implementation of community service programs. Now, Chairperson, honorable members, in terms of the layout of the strategic plan, the first chapter provides the strategic overview, the second one, a medium-term strategic focus, the third, an overview of the programs, and then within that, three appendices. Firstly, the detailed information on the outputs. The second part links to other plans, and then the third, an overview of services to be delivered through the instrument of public-private partnerships. Secondly, as part of Appendix C, utilization of consultants, and then thirdly, in Appendix C, the exposition of the public entities that report to the executive authority, the Minister of Defense. In the strategic overview itself, it seeks to present developments that the Department of Defense has had to respond to, right from cabinet pronouncement, as well as part of the promotion of corporate citizenship. But also, as a matter of emphasis, it also mandates, seeks to spell out what is the mandate of the department, and then third, what are the strategic objectives. Fourth, the macro structure, as approved by the Minister of Defense, the former, in 15th August 2008, and to indicate that much as that is the structure that is as approved, there are moves underway to function and also to change that organizational structure, but we are illustrating it as that is what is approved. And then furthermore, if the vision and the mission and also the mission success factors of the Department of Defense, and then what is the value system that the department follows, and then the strategic approach, and then last but one, the DoD strategies, and then the organizational performance management. In that regard, the balance scorecard is a tool that we use. Now, members will be familiar with the macro-organizational design as presented here, and I would not want to dwell much into it, as members are already familiar with it. Suffice to reiterate the point that it is under review, and once the minister has gone through the entirety of the defense establishment, there will then be a clear illustration and appearance before yourself to give an indication of what the state of the macro organization of the Department of Defense is at that point. In the strategic overview, with respect to the mission success factors, these are encapsulated as follows. Six, the first being the national consensus on defense, which is not a new strategic overview, but a re-emphasis of that. Secondly, excellent strategic direction. Thirdly, excellent resource management. Fourth, effective combat forces and support forces. And then fifth, professionalism in the conduct of operations. And then sixth, successful implementation of the transformation process. In terms of the value systems, these are categorized into individual and organizational values. Insofar as the balance scorecard is concerned, this we are introducing or have already introduced, but we are moving in phases to improve our management of performance, and we'll be providing an update on progress. And then furthermore, the strategic approach, that the positioning strategy that we have adopted is informed by four elements. Firstly, that the defense strategy should take into cognizance the need for the Department of Defense to respond to the geostrategic as well as the macroeconomic global imperatives, and also deepen and institutionalize civil-military relations. Secondly, the focus on defense diplomacy in support of cabinet outcomes number 11. And then thirdly, deepening the military strategy. And then fourth, support strategies as part of the implementation of the overall defense strategy. The second chapter on the deals with the medium-term strategic focus, and it provides a detail on the following. Firstly, an overview of our strategic planning cycle and process. This taken from the overall national planning cycle and process, as well as indicating at what point do we start with which element, right from the Makhotla, as well as coming into the planning and budgeting cycle. And then the medium-term strategic focus. And then thirdly, alignment with government priorities. And then fourth, a Minister of Defense priorities as confirmed by the Minister, and that those have been indicated to the committee. And then alignment to the medium-term strategic framework for priorities. And then also the legislative changes that are likely to influence the program spending plans over the medium-term expenditure period. And these we do indicate what legislation we foresee would have to be amended or new legislation introduced by ourselves. And then resource consideration, and then budget allocation, expenditure trends and analysis for the 2010-11 budget allocation. And then last, enterprise risk management. Within that, what are the key corporate risks with mitigating actions? And then the second chapter, furthermore, still deals also with the, as part of the overview of the DoD planning cycle, in terms of how that goes. This is first initiated by an environmental analysis and then a planning and budget seminar, which we normally then have in our departmental cycle during September and October. And then within that, have a presentation by the minister of the minister's guidelines, which will then inform the strategic planning process for the forthcoming or next financial year. And then within that as well, following the minister's guidelines, the accounting officer guidelines, which then get into more detail of the departmental guidelines. And then as you go further down as part of the planning cycle, services and divisions submitting their plans by April, so that these are then presented to the Departmental Planning, Budget and Evaluation Committee, DPBEC, during May-June period. And then the SC, that is the Secretariat Council, and the MCC, the Military Command Council, approved plans submitted during November for inclusion in the Department of Defense Strategic Plan. And then that then followed by the inputs from the Cabinet Lekgotla, the State of the Nation Address, as well as the budget vote incorporated. And then the presentation by the accounting officer of the strategic plan to the Minister of Defense during a Minister of Defense work session during the period of January-February, and then the strategic plan submitted and approved by the Minister of Defense during February or March for tabling in accordance also with the parliamentary timetable. And then tabling in terms of Regulation 5 as amended to take place then 10 days prior to the defense vote. And we've been informed that our defense vote is on the 4th of May in 2010. And then furthermore, the planning process as supported by all of those entities as indicated earlier, the Military Command Council, the Secretariat Council, the Council on Defense, the Plenary Defense Staff Council, the Defense Planning Board, and also the DPBEC to align to the DoD priorities and government prescripts, and then the necessary adjustments that have to be made to the process so that there is continuous alignment with the government strategic planning process. In terms of the strategic focus, that's still in Chapter 2 of the strategic plan. The strategic focus in this 2010 strategic plan seeks to review the migration from an affordable, sustainable, and credible force to one which is mandate-driven force design and structure, to enable the fulfillment of ordered commitments as well as provide support to government's diplomatic initiatives. And then also furthermore, embracing government initiatives aimed at combating poverty in order to promote development, peace and stability, both in the region and continentally. And this through participation in peace missions, confidence and security building measures through bilateral fora, continental peace and security structures of the African Union, as well as the Southern African Development Community, and then ensuring systematic phased withdrawal from internal deployments in support of the South African police services. The other factor as part of the second chapter as a medium-term strategic focus, alignment with government priorities, that will deal then with our participation in the clusters of government, primarily two. That is the JCPS Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster. In that regard, for that cluster, there is outcome number three as part of the national outputs and measures. And outcome number three, just to quote it, indicates all people in South Africa are and feel safe. And with respect to the defense establishment, our output in that regard of that outcome number three pertains to border safeguarding vis-a-vis the borderline security, as well as seeing what our participation is in the forthcoming establishment of a border management agency. But our emphasis there is more on borderline. And then secondly, our participation in the cluster of government, the ICTS, that is the International Cooperation, Trade and Security Cluster, that particular cluster has outcome number 11, which basically stipulates creating a better South Africa and contribute to a safer Africa and a better Africa, where outputs in this ICTS pertain to the advancement of regional and global peace, security, and sustainable development. Now, that is our participation in the clusters. Now, this, however, does not exclude our contribution as the defense establishment in other outcome areas, as indicated. For our purposes, specifically what we are doing as part of the introduction of the military skills development system, and just to mention but a few. Now, we have aligned the plans with the Minister of Defense priorities as well as the intended cluster priorities, but we are continuing to then seek a direct relationship between the estimates of national expenditure performance indicators as well as the ones that have been identified in the aforementioned outcome areas. With respect to the Minister of Defense priorities, the detail of which in the main document is in pages 23 to 24, just to reiterate those, we have gone through this, but primarily establishing a fully functional department to support military veterans, rejuvenation and upgrading the landlord program, reviewing of the Defense Secretariat to align it with the mandate for the defense organization and support requirements for the Minister of Defense and military veterans, and then upgrading DoD infrastructure, and then rolling out the DoD works regiment, and then establishing the National Defense Force Service Commission and support structures, transforming AMSCO, and then incrementally and progressively refocusing DENEL to support identified defense strategic capabilities. And then the last part with respect to this chapter deals with the promoting a culture of good governance through, within that, to also reiterate realization of a qualification-free audit through a multi-pronged approach that addresses the root causes of auditor general qualifications and then information technology as a tool to enhance a better performance. And then secondly, optimal utilization of collateral value of the defense establishment and our capabilities and seeing how we use that to respond to socioeconomic needs. And then third, a defense strategy that provides for defense's current and emerging needs. And then fourth, revitalization of reserves and then providing a lead to development and implementing community service programs. Now, the alignment that we are making seeks to give substance to these medium-term strategic framework priorities, which are spelled out as economic growth, social economy and economic infrastructure, rural development and land reform, skills and human resources base, improving the national health profile, the fight against crime and corruption, building cohesive and sustainable communities, international cooperation, sustainable resource management, and building a democratic developmental state. Now, the alignment to the medium-term strategic framework that is in the detail on pages 24 to 29 of the main document. We will deal with it as follows. On the left, to indicate what the strategic priority is, as reflected in the medium-term strategic framework, and then on the right-hand side, right-hand block, to indicate what are we as the defense establishment doing to align to those medium-term strategic framework priorities. Strategic priority number one, which is spelled out and cut across the entirety of government, is the speeding up growth and transforming the economy to create decent work and sustainable livelihoods. Insofar as the Department of Defense alignment to that priority, it is to ensure that procurement processes promote broad-based economic empowerment. Secondly, the development of a white paper on the defense industry. This will be on the back of previously the second or third parliament had approved a white paper on the defense industry, but to then table or come up with another one. And the strategic priority number two, which speaks to the massive program to build economic and social infrastructure, as a defense establishment, our alignment to that particular priority is twofold. Firstly, promoting partnerships with other organs of state at local and provincial level to accelerate the delivery of socioeconomic needs. Secondly, establishment of a DoD works capability, works regiment capability, to also address public works capacity challenges while simultaneously empowering the youth and underutilized DoD personnel. Strategic priority number three, on the comprehensive rural land development strategy, which is linked to land and agrarian reform as well as food security. Insofar as our alignment to that priority is concerned, a finalization of pending land claims, that is in the context of land restitution, whatever claims may have been lodged, and then also developing partnerships with local government and broad-based community organizations in optimal utilization of underutilized military land and facilities, and then engaging relevant departments, specifically National Treasury and Public Works, in a coordinated and focused manner to see to the disposal of excess military land and facilities, also seeing how we can be able to add value to endowment properties. On strategic priority number four, which speaks to the strengthening the skills and human resources base, for the defense establishment alignment to that particular priority, is to seek to access to post-secondary education funding by means of bursaries. Secondly, access to part of full qualification-based national qualification framework linked training opportunities. And then thirdly, restructuring our training capability primarily in the logistics environment to be streamlined towards force preparation objectives and broad-based skills and human resources development. And then fourthly, enhancing the military skills development system, MSDS, that widens a graduate's talent and skills base through various cultural activities and sporting activities in the defense establishment. On the fifth strategic priority, which is improving the health profile of all South Africans, with respect to the defense establishment, we are looking at hospital revitalization program, which is already underway, speaking in particular to our military hospitals as well as the sick base and so on throughout the country. Secondly, filling of critical posts within the military health services system, and also improvement of the remuneration of healthcare professionals. And then thirdly, as the defense establishment, escalating the TB as well as HIV and AIDS awareness as well as eradication programs. Strategic priority number six, which is on the intensification of the fight against crime and corruption. Within that, as our alignment, implementation of the cabinet decision regarding employment of the SANDF for a full spectrum of border duties, borderline safeguarding services inside South Africa and also in international waters. So to speak, as part of the constitutional principle of protection of the national sovereignty and integrity. And the committee will recall the presentation that was made within the context of that particular priority. Secondly, the full implementation of the anti-criminality strategy and plan. Thirdly, promoting financial disclosures at all levels as part of a broad government framework. And then fourth, strengthening the governance, risk and compliance, that is what TRC, processes to address ethical and fiduciary requirements that guide securing of service providers. And then lastly, strengthening our risk management framework. In that regard, we have already established a risk management directorate within the department. Strategic priority number seven, on building a cohesive, caring and sustainable communities. As defense, to align to that particular priority, we are establishing a fully functional Department of Military Veterans. Secondly, intensifying the civic education program to include all members and employees. Strategic priority number eight, and which is the last of the priorities, which is pursuing African advancement and enhanced international cooperation. The first being promoting nationally identified outputs that relate to advancement of regional and global peace, security, and sustainability. The second, ensuring regional, continental, and international peace security structures are capacitated and strengthened by appropriate deployments. This we are doing on a continuous basis, whether in the United Nations, African Union, or in the SADC context. And then thirdly, ensuring adequate legal instruments and frameworks exist to support required deployments, requisite deployments in peace missions and general military assistance missions. And then also improving governance within SADC in terms of defense-specific security sector reform programs that we are engaged in as we speak. And then also implementing and monitoring IPSA agreement, that is India, Brazil, South Africa, those trilateral agreements and action plans, those, of course, that are relevant to the defense establishment. And then also, lastly, on that strategy priority number eight, ensuring alignment of agreements with NEPAD, revitalization of the NAASP, and then support the African Union and the United Nations efforts to guarantee lasting solutions to conflict resolution. And then strategic priority number nine, on sustainable resource management and use. Our alignment to that is assisting protecting marine resources in cooperation with the police. Secondly, promoting possible responsible management of land resources through collaboration to promote land use recycling. Thirdly, ensuring compliance with the National Environmental Management Act, the NEMA, and also applicable protocols regarding sustainable resource management, and then promote prudent utilization of defense allocated bandwidth, this as part of our involvement in the ICT across government, and also what expertise we have through our command management and information systems. And then also compliance with protocols to ensure sustainable environmental management. And then lastly, on that strategic priority 9, ensuring that what we have already implemented, that is the logistics intervention and restructuring program, objectives are accomplished and embraced within the DoD at all levels. The last strategic priority, which is number 10, speaks to building a developmental state, including improvement of the public service. In that regard, the review of the Defense Secretariat to align it with the defense mandate, and then continually project patriotism and high levels of discipline, and lastly, further deepening the understanding of the code of conduct, both for military members and also for non-military members in the defense establishment. The part on the chapter 2, which is related to legislative changes that are likely to influence program spending over the medium-term expenditure period, we put before you the following pieces of legislation. This is the Military Discipline Bill, the Military Veterans Affairs Bill, not amendment, but the Military Veterans Affairs Bill, and then the Defense Amendment Bill, as well as the National Defense Force Service Commission Bill, and the Geneva Conventions Bill. We should say that with regard to all of these, there are already drafts that have been presented, and it's in process, and depending on the committee's legislative program, we will then be ready to engage with the committee on those specific pieces of legislation. And then expenditure trends with respect to the Defense Department. We have illustrated these in the estimate of national expenditure as tabled by the Minister of Finance 2 weeks ago. And as we proceed, we'll illustrate the slides that provide the summary of our budget allocation for the defense establishment. The detail of that is firstly, before we get into what became the eventual allocation for defense, we need to indicate that we did submit our funding proposals during 2009, and you will see as you juxtapose the funding proposals with what was eventually then given in the letter of allocation. Firstly, serial number 1, as a top priority that we had then tabled as a funding proposal, was the establishment of the Military Veterans Management Department. Of course, at the time, there were no figures that were presented, but we know that in the allocation that has finally been given, that there was some money that was presented, and you will see that as we go on. Secondly, to seek funding for a new SANDF remuneration system, the costing for that in the medium-term expenditure framework period for 2010-11 at $904 million, 2011, $959 million, and 2012, $1 billion. Serial number 3 on the Defense Rejuvenation Program, and that is broken up into upgrading the landward defense systems, secondly, maintenance and repair of operational vehicle fleet, thirdly, procurement of critical ammunition, and fourth, replacement of the operational ambulance fleet. Now, the figures, respectively, are 543 for the landward defense for the 2010-11. That was in the proposal. 2011, $1.6 billion. 2012, $2 billion. On maintenance and repair of the operational vehicle fleet, $150 million. 2010, 2011, $158, and 2012, $165. And then on procurement of critical ammunition, $100 million for the next financial year, which is at the end of this month. And then $105 and $110 million in 2012-13, respectively. And on the replacement of the operational ambulance fleet, $3 million, and then $244 in 2011-12, and then zero in 2012. And on the operating SDP equipment, that is serial number 4, 410 during 2010-11, and then 2011-12, 503, and 2012-13, 569. Now, on the operating the SDP equipment, that is broken down into SDP, that is the Strategic Defense Packages aircraft, at 224 million for 2010, 2011 299, 2012 344. And then on the operating the strategic defense packages vessels, primarily in the Navy, 186 in 2010, 2011 142, and then 149 in 2012-13. And then the fifth funding proposal that we had submitted, continuation training for reserves, 135 million for the 2010-11, and then 142 for 2011-12, 149 for 2012-13. And then six as the last funding proposal, the DACE master plan, that is the Defense Enterprise Information Systems. That is primarily in the ICT environment and enhancement of our ICT systems to ensure integration. 351 million for 2010-11, 397, 2011-12, and 461, 2012-13. So the total being respectively in 2010-11, 2.5 billion, 2011, 4.1, and 2012, 4.5 billion. Now, that is the sum total of what was in the proposals as we submitted. Now, let's look at that juxtaposed with what eventually became the letter of allocation as issued by National Treasury on the 20th of November for the 2010-11 medium-term expenditure period. In terms of the 2009 allocations, the departmental baseline stood at 32.3 billion, and then 34 billion 2011-12, and then 36 for 2012-13, and then additional funds allocated to baseline covered those areas. For 2010-11, for the new SANDF remuneration system, 600 million for 2011, for the same 730 and 850 for 2012-13. On the second one, as part of additional funds allocated to baseline, military skills development system, 50 million for 2010-11, 70 for 2011-12, and 100 million for 2012-13. And then with respect to the establishment of the Military Veterans Department, 20 million for the 2010-11 financial year, 30 million for the 2011, and then for the 2012, 30 million again. Those figures will certainly be revised as the department gets underway. And then on the landward defense modernization, zero allocated for the 2010-11 financial year, but for 2011-12, 100 million and 500 million for the 2010 period. On the strategic defense procurement program, as indicated earlier in the proposal that we had submitted, zero for 2010-11, zero for 2011, and 200 million for 2012. And then lastly, on the additional funds allocated to the baseline, compensation of employees adjustment, 422 in 2010, 2011, 470, and 2012, 510. On adjustments to the baseline, you'll see there it's minus 2.7 billion. That is in overall terms for 2010 and for 2011, minus 1.8 billion, and for 2012, minus 2.069 billion. And those speak to the particular breakdown of baseline efficiency savings on the A400M contract, savings on the strategic defense procurement programs, and then rescheduling with respect to the upgrading of the runway at Air Force Base Waterkloof. So that is the breakdown of those figures, as you see, for 2010, 2011, and 2012. on the 2010 MTEF allocations, which will be carried into the 2010 estimate of national expenditure. In that regard, earmarked amounts, that is devolution of funds from public works, that translates for 2010 at that amount of 1.7, and then 1.9 for 2011-12, and then 2 for 2012. Strategic procurement program, and there's a note also there, department's contribution, 1.2, 2010 or 2011, 1.22 for 2010, and 2011, 1.234, and then 2012, 201. The final letter of allocation, furthermore, also in the adjusted allocation, now this is indicated per program in the letter of allocation. In what we had in 2009-10, which is coming to an end, the global figure for all those programs, the administration program, force employment program, Lendwa defense program, air defense, maritime defense, military health support, defense intelligence and general support, totals 31.2 billion, and then total to, for the 2010 to be appropriated 30.7, and then for 2011, 33 projected to be 33 and planned to be allocated 33.9 billion, and then an increase for 2012, 36.3 billion. In terms of the economic classification of the allocation that we have received, on current payments split into two, which is compensation of employees. On the adjusted allocation, it was 12 for the 2009, and then for 2010-11, 13 million as indicated there, and then 2011, 14, and then 15 in 2012, and then goods and services, 8, 9, 10, and 11, respectively. On the total current payments, 20 million, as indicated, then 23, and then also 24 and 26 million, respectively. On transfers and subsidies, that specifically broken down into the agencies and accounts, public corporations and private enterprises, non-profit institutions, households, respectively, that summed up to 9.8 million in 2010-11, 6.8 in 2010-11, 8.6 in 11-12, and 8.8 in 2012. And then payment of capital assets, that broken down into buildings and other fixed structures, machinery and equipment, specialized military assets, biological assets, software and other intangible assets. The total payments for as transfers and payments for capital assets in 09 was 742. In 2010-11, it will increase to 786, and then go down in 2011-12 to 455, and then spike to 845 in 2012-13. And the totals there in the financial year that were going out, it's that indicated there at the bottom, 31 million, 2010, 30, and then 33, and then 36 for 2012-13. Now, what have been the significant changes in the 2010-11 medium-term expenditure framework? The significant changes split into general. Over 2008-09 to 2012-13, our baseline has been reduced with efficiency savings of 23.1 in 2008-09 and 499.6 in 2009-10 and 3.2 billion in 2010-11. And then 2.2 in 2011-12 and 2.1 in 2012-13, thus amounting to a total reduction of 8 billion over the 5-year period. Included in the total reduction is a saving of 4.5. That is a global figure, but the big chunk of which is on the saving with the cancellation of the Airbus A400 aircraft contract. The second one, there is an expectation and plan that will increase revenue from 676 to 756 million, giving it an annual annual rate of 3.8% between 09-10 financial year and the 2012-13 financial year. Now, to get into the specific details of the program, program number one is the administration program. The administration program covers mainly the headquarters element, and you will see as we get into the detail in terms of which divisions in particular, right from the ministry and specific divisions are covered in the administration program. On the administration program, which is program one, expenditure increased from 2 billion in 06-07 to 4 billion in 2012-13. The annual average annual rate of increase was 12.1%, primarily due to the following factors. Firstly, increasing office accommodation sub-program, where expenditure increases at an average annual rate of 14.9%. Secondly, on the human resource support services program in 2010-11 due to additional allocation for establishing a management capability for military veterans affairs. And then thirdly, increasing 10.5% in the legal services sub-program for the 2010-11 due to implementation of the occupation-specific dispensation for legal practitioners as applicable across all of government. And then on program two, which is the fourth employment program, the expenditure increase is of 1.5 billion in 06-07 to 2.1 billion by the end of the medium-term expenditure framework of 2012-13. At an average rate, annual rate of 5.6%. And the major contributing factor to this is due to the staffing of operational structures. On program three, on the landward defense, the expenditure increase is from of 6.4 billion in 06-07 to 11.1 billion by 2012-13. And this is mainly due to additional funding in the increase in the military skills development system intakes, increased maintenance requirements of the South African Army's aging operational vehicle fleet, also initiating of the landward defense equipment renewal project, and lastly, procurement of critical ammunition. That is what is covered then in that increase. For that period with respect to the landward defense program. The second element of it is with respect to reaching delivery milestones, and that is specifically regarding the shoulder launch air defense artillery system as well as the mobile ground-to-air missile system program. And this explains the significant jump of 64.8% increase in expenditure. And that is in particular within the sub-program of the landward defense, that is the air defense artillery capability. And then lastly, on the landward program, the overall spending in the forthcoming period will be focused on providing forces for internal as well as external deployments. Also linked to that, the issue of the borderline engagement, which will affect primarily the Army, but all the services individuals will be affected. Honorable Chair, members, on Program 4, on the air defense, the air defense program accounts for 26.2% of the total expenditure of the budget. There has been a decrease in the MTF period, and this has been primarily due to the termination of the A400M strategic airlift program and also finalization of delivery milestones on the Hawk leading fighter trainer aircraft, as well as the Gripen. The third element on the air defense program is mainly the increase in the training capability and the command and control capability sub-programs. And these are due to the upgrading of the Pilatus PC-7 aircraft, trainer aircraft, as well as the need to introduce radar and ground navigation systems. And then maritime defense, which is program number five, This accounts for 7.8% of the department's total expenditure. And then the expenditure in the program on maritime defense decreases from 2.6 billion in 2006-07 to 2.2 billion in 2010-11 at an annual average rate of 4.7% due to commissioning of the frigates and the submarines that has happened already between 2006 and 2009. And then thirdly, increase of 23.2% and 21% in 2012-13 in expenditure in the maritime logistics support capability, as well as the base support capability programs. These are due mainly to the planned acquisition of hydrographic vessels. The current hydrographic vessels that are in use are reaching the end of their life cycle, having been in service for over 30 years. And then also the planned recruitment and staffing of personnel with scarce skills, in particular Navy divers, technicians, as well as engineers. On Program 6, which is the Military Health Support Program, that program accounts for 8.1% of the department's total expenditure. And this increases from 1.7 billion in 2006-07 to 3.2 billion in 2012-13 at an average annual rate of 11.1%, mainly due to the following factors. Firstly, the implementation of the scarce skills and rural allowances for health professionals. Secondly, improvements to the health informatics system. Thirdly, continued and increasing rollout of the antiretrovirals. And then fourth, sustaining the presidential health team. And then fifth, increasing the military skills development system program within the military health program. And then replacement of the operational ambulance fleet. Program 7 on the Defense Intelligence Program, that accounts for only 1.9% of the total expenditure of the department. And here in this particular program, the increase has been seen by spending from 353.6 million in 2006-07 to 698.9 million in 2012-13 at an average annual rate of 12% due to planned investment and development of strategic information collection capabilities. Program 8, which is the General Support Program, this accounts for 11% of the total expenditure, increasing from 1.9 billion in 2006-07 to 4.4 in the 2012 at the end of the MTF period, focusing on firstly upgrading runways and the hard stands at the Air Force Base Waterkloof. That work is still ongoing despite the fact that the runway has now, part of the runways have now been reopened and are functional after repairs. And then repair and maintenance of infrastructure, overall defense infrastructure and facilities. Third, research and development of new generation telecommunication systems. And then fourth, repair and maintenance of defense infrastructure and facilities also across the board. And then lastly, investment in test and evaluation capability, electronic research and development, as well as missile technology research and development. Now, Chapter 2 covers risk management. It's a relatively short chapter. It identifies what are the enterprise risks, but also simultaneously moves beyond identification of the enterprise risks, but also says what are the mitigation strategies or action plans that are going to be put in place. On the first enterprise risk, that is the continued loss of scarce skills due to exit of large numbers of highly skilled personnel, the mitigating strategy and action that is underway is the Interim National Defense Force Service Commission that has been established, its main focus being to consider remuneration and conditions of service of members of the South African National Defense Force, as well as, most importantly, introducing a unique service dispensation for the SANDF outside the ambit of the broader public service. Secondly, the implementation of a Department of Defense-wide retention strategy. And then thirdly, the Air Force has already started the partnering with the local aviation industry. The second enterprise risk is with respect to inadequate funding for human resource expenditure, which could result in a further burden on our budget votes or budget allocation. And in that regard, we are continuing to engage with National Treasury for additional funding. The third enterprise risk, the declining rand value of our budget may have a negative effect on our operating budget, as well as, most importantly, capital acquisition budget. In this regard, also, we continue to engage with National Treasury. The fourth enterprise risk is with respect to inadequate infrastructure maintenance and repair due to the absence of strategic integrated planning to address the matter of facilities, especially repair and maintenance priorities. In that regard, we have already started engagement with respect to migration and looking at how and when and what we need to do with respect to migrating some of the responsibilities to the DOD, as spelled out in the GIAMA Act, that is the Government Immovable Assets Management Act. And then also, we have already started bilateral engagements at the level of the deputy ministers of the Department of Defense and Military Veterans, as well as the Department of Public Works, and also a bilateral forum at the level of DGs and senior officials between Public Works and the Department of Defense. And then lastly, establishing monitoring mechanisms with fixed periodical reporting schedules to the ministers of defense and public works, respectively. On the next enterprise risks, that is the incompatible IT systems that could result and are actually resulting in ineffective and inefficient performance and management information. The mitigating action that we have undertaken is an analysis of all systems with the intention of integration. In that regard, we are continuing to participate in the government-wide integrated financial management system, which will also hook up the other resource systems, human resources, logistics, and so on. And then also, we are in the process of planning, given that this, what we've said before on the IFMS, is taking so long, we are in the process of engaging National Treasury so that we can deviate and have our own Department of Defense-specific integrated systems. It is one of the factors that continue to have us receive qualified audits. And then the third element, non-compliance with legislation, for instance, certain aspects of the PFMA, that we are addressing through good corporate governance throughout the department. And then inadequate consensus on defense may lead to poor reputation in the public domain. This we're dealing with mitigating by an enhanced communication strategy that we are unfolding with our head of communications. On overview of the programs, that is in Chapter 3, and we will move quicker, but there's still some slides to go. Chapter 3, the overview of the programs, presents the outputs that define how we operationalize our mandate in terms of force readiness, force support, and force employment. It also presents translation of our output in terms of the programs as articulated in Vote 21, and then what are the trend indicators. These are presented in this particular Chapter 3, and furthermore, also what is presented is our measurable objectives as extracted from the strategic plan and highlighted under each specific program. The key tenets that speak to the execution of the defense mandate, basically delivered on the defense mandate, are the following key tenets that provide a case for good practice and good governance. Firstly, the execution of our defense commitments as ordered and funded by government. Secondly, provision of contingency-ready and cost-effective defense capabilities as specified in approved policy. And then thirdly, sound management of the department. Fourth, administration of the department within the prescriptions of the law, the regulatory framework, and government policy. And then furthermore, assuring a sustainability, continuous improvement of output quality, and reduction of the cost of our processes as well as accounting for them, and then assuring quality improvement of people, our human resource, and then assuring quality command and management information in the DoD, and then quality improvement of our equipment and facilities. Now, what are our outputs? Military health, outputs as provided for in terms of our mandate, our defense commitments, and these include, but are not necessarily exclusive to what we indicate, the operations that are ongoing in nature during the year and for which plans and financial provision can be made in advance. Secondly, operations that must be executed during the year and if unforeseeable, for which no provision has been made. And then thirdly, joint interdepartmental as well as multinational exercises as required during the year to prepare forces for operations. As we speak, there is an exercise, a Good Hope, that is underway. That is an exercise with the German Navy and the German Air Force. And then landward defense capabilities, air defense capabilities, and maritime defense capabilities. But still, as part of our output, military health capability, defense diplomacy, which includes the deployment of defense attachés, the servicing of our memorandum of understanding, that those which are defense-related, and then participation in defense and security structures of the UN, AU, and the SADC, and then provision of defense-related policy and ministerial advice, and provision of a cryptographic security service for government departments, and then the National Codification Bureau, and the provision of appropriate framework for sound policy direction, advice, and systematic monitoring and evaluation, and then provision of defense-related capabilities responding to the needs of the country. On the overview of our programs, they are as spelled out in Vote 21, the administration, force employment, landward defense, air defense, maritime defense, military health support, defense intelligence, and general support. Now, what are our performance indicators? These in the main document are listed in the appendices in tabular format, which are basically speaking to those program names. And you'll see from force employment, that is both landward, air, maritime, military health support, and general support, the indicator, total number of active reserves, and then to then looking at the past performance indicators, for 2006, 7, 7, 8, 8, 9, and then the current, which is the 2009, and then also for the projected 2010-11, 2011-12, and then 2012-13. I'll not go into those figures as indicated there, but to highlight the program. On the force employment program, the indicator, the number of external operations each year, you'll see in 2006-7, 14, 8, 7, 8, 11, 8, 9, 9, and then current back up to 12, and then projected for 2010-11, right up to 2012-13-12. And then still on force employment, that is now with specific to the personnel, number of personnel deployed, that is indicated for the previous period, 06-7, and then the current period into the MTEF ending in 2012-13. And then still on forced employment, and now this one is splitting it into the internal operations in support of other government departments, and then in terms of the previous periods, and then the current period and the forthcoming period as indicated there. And then the further force employment, this time the indicator being number of person days used during internal operations, and that indicated from 078, there was no indication in 067, because that category we were not dealing with. But 7889, and then the current, that is indicated in terms of the number of person days used. And then the projection for the forthcoming period, right up to 2012-13. And then on the force employment in the landward and maritime defense programs and the general support, the indicator in this case being MSDS, Military Skills Development, members in each system per year. That is as indicated for the previous period, 067 up to 9, and then the current and then the future projected right up to 1213. And then on the air defense, the flying hours, previous periods indicated the current and then the future projected flying hours right up to 2012-13. Of course, all what is in the projected is subject to change as we continue through implementation and as we will come back again with the strategic plan for the forthcoming period. On maritime defense, that is indicated by the number of sea hours on patrol in South African maritime zones each year, as well as in other international waters. And that figure covers both those two elements for 067, right up to 9, and then the current, and then the future projected. On military health support, as the last of the performance indicator programs, the number of health care activities per year, and that is indicated from the current right until the future projected. That is static, but we foresee that in the projected period, and we'll come back to the committee with respect to a variation on that figure, as indicated. On Chapter 3 on administration, Chapter 3 conducts primarily policy development, management, and administration of the department. Now, the measurable objective of Chapter 3 and Chapter 3 starts with a measurable objective of a provision of a sound defense direction and advice, and also providing defense-related social responsibilities, and then furthermore developing consensus on defense, and then sound policy providing sound policy and administration, and then provision of contingency-ready defense capabilities, and then a framework for systematic monitoring and evaluation. Now, the output table for Chapter 3 is in the hidden slides, but in terms of the actual main document, the detail of that is covered in pages 50 to 65 of the main document. And then the coverage of the administration program is firstly ministerial sub-programs, ministerial direction, that is the ministry in its totality, offices of the minister, office of the deputy minister, and then the departmental direction, that covered in the office of the Secretary for Defense, and then command and control of the SANDF, sub-program of the office of the chief of the South African National Defense Force, sub-program policy and planning, covered by the defense strategy policy and planning, as well as the military policy strategy and planning, within the corporate staff division. And then the financial services through the chief financial officer. And then further sub-programs of the administration programs, the sub-program acquisition services, this is covered through the chief of defense material division as well as the head of supply chain integration division. And then inspection services through the inspector general and the internal audit functions. And human resources support services, coverage through the Chief of Human Resources, and then defense legal services, sub-program through the Chief of Defense Legal Services. In terms of the sub-program on religious services, that is covered through the Chaplain General, communication services through the head of communication, coordinating all the communication activities into and within the department. Defense reserve direction, through the Chief of Defense Reserves, Defense Foreign Relations, through Defense International Affairs, and also Defense Foreign Relations, and Office Accommodation Sub-Program through the Chief of Logistics. Now, the Chapter 3 on Force Employment. Chapter 3, Force Employment, deals primarily its purpose, Joint Operations Division, whose mandate is to provide and employ defense capabilities, including operational capability to successfully conduct all operations, as well as joint, whether it be the joint operations, interdepartmental, and multinational military exercises. In terms of its outputs, those are covered by operations and joint interdepartmental and multinational military exercises. The measurable objectives thereof are to provide and employ special operations capability also in accordance with national requirements. Still on forced employment, conducting on an average, and you'll have seen in the performance indicator section, an average 12 external peace missions per year in accordance with requirements to promote peace and security, and then conducting those 12 forced preparation exercises over the next 3 years. These exclude special forces exercises, and then conducting on average of 4 operations per year in support of other government departments, and complying with international obligations. The output table is spelled out on pages 66 to 68 of the main document. The Landward Defense Program is still on chapter 3. Its purpose is to provide prepared and supported landward defense capability for defense and protection of South Africa, that is the Army. Outputs of the landward defense capabilities, measurable objectives, to prepare an infantry capability to provide at least 3 infantry battalions a year, sustained for external deployment, 1 airborne battalion as the chief of the South African National Defense Force Reaction Force, 1 multi-role battalion for internal safety and security, 1 battalion in support for internal security operations, and 4 battalions involved in exercises. The other measurable objective for the Landward Defense Program is preparing an armor capability by exercising at least 1 tank regiment and 1 armored car regiment with 1 squadron for internal deployment a year. The third one, preparing an artillery capability by exercising 1 composite artillery regiment and 1 light or airborne artillery battery, having 1 light artillery battery in reserve, as well as 1 battery for internal deployment a year. And still on the Landward Defense Program, what are the objectives and measures? The objectives and measures of the Landward Program are to prepare that air defense artillery capability by exercising 1 air defense artillery regiment and 1 light or airborne air defense artillery battery, having 1 light air defense artillery battery as part of our mobile capability of the Landward Force for internal deployment per year. And then an engineer capability to provide 3 sustained composite engineer squadrons for external deployment, 1 composite engineer squadron for internal reserves, and 1 exercising, 1 light airborne engineer squadron a year. And then also, lastly, providing a signals capability by providing 2 signals regiments a year for external deployment, and then retaining an internal reserve, as well as continued involvement in exercises. On the air defense program, the purpose of the air defense program is the Air Force provides prepared and supported air defense capabilities for defense and protection of the RSA, and the outputs are air defense capabilities, measurable objectives, 4 helicopter squadrons and 1 combat support squadron a year, and then 3 medium transport squadrons, and then 1 maritime and transport squadron, 1 light transport squadron, and 9 reserve squadrons as the required readiness levels a year. And then the other measure, 1 air combat squadron a year, and a 24-hour air command and control capability in place. And the detail of that is in page 72 to 73 of the output table. And next is the Maritime Defense Program, and its purpose is to provide prepared and supported maritime defense capabilities for defense and protection of the RSA. Its outputs are maritime defense capabilities, the measurable objectives being surface combat capability of 4 frigates, 1 combat support vessel, 3 offshore patrol vessels, OPVs, 3 inshore patrol vessels, IPVs, and a maritime reaction squadron in each annual operational cycle. And then furthermore, a subsurface combat capability of 3 submarines in each annual operational cycle. And then 2 mine countermeasure systems in each annual operational cycle to ensure safe access to South African harbors, that is the mine countermeasures, and where mine clearance may be required to do so. And then thirdly, ongoing hydrographic survey capability to ensure safe navigation in charting areas and exclusive economic zones, and also to meet our international obligations. The output table on that is in 75 to 76 of the main document. The military health support program, that is the South African Military Health Services, the purpose thereof is to provide prepared and supported health capabilities and service for defense and protection of the of the country. And then the output, a military health service and capabilities to the defense force and also where it is required and mandated, including support to the presidency. Measurable objective, a comprehensive multidisciplinary military health service to a projected patient population of 230,000 members per year. That, of course, includes members and their dependents. And then secondly, a health support capability of 5 medical battalion groups, including 1 specialist medical battalion group for deployed and contingency ready forces. And then lastly, a military health service providing a comprehensive multidisciplinary health service to that projected population as indicated of 230,000. The output table for military health services support is in pages 78 to 79 of the main document. Chapter 3 on defense intelligence, a defense intelligence and a counterintelligence capability. Its outputs are defense intelligence and counterintelligence capabilities. And the measurable objectives will be as specified and dealt with within the sister committee, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. The general support program, the purpose of the general support program is to provide those support capabilities and services to the department. Its outputs are actually encapsulated in the support capability, that is in logistics, the military police, the command management and information division, and then also technology development and the BPST, that is British Peace Support Training Team, and then departmental support. The measurable objectives are general support capabilities and services by providing appropriate, ready and sustained material, facilities, movement and logistics services, focusing on supply chain management to enable force preparation and force employment. But also, the general support program seeks to provide the department with key information and communication systems by firstly repair and maintaining the department's infrastructure at 33 bases over the next 3 years, and that is broken down as follows: 13 in 2010-11, 9 in 2011-12, and 11 in 2012-13, and also executing the capital works plan in 52 projects, projected already for 2010-11 are 7, 2011-12, 24, and 21 in 2012-13. And then, of course, also providing, that is the general support program, providing appropriate, ready, and sustained material, facilities, movement, and logistics services to enable force preparation and employment by means of service that focuses on supply chain and life cycle management. The objectives and measures of that program are in ensuring that the mainframe service that runs the IT of the Department of Defense is available 98% of the time, and the one that is the wide area network 95% of the time. And also, as an objective and a measure, providing information and communication system solutions in accordance with the Defense Enterprise Information Systems Master Plan, as per program and project milestones and associated deliverables. And then thirdly and lastly, reduce the number of new criminal cases under investigation by the military police by 10% a year, and also sustaining 1 provost company in deployment, 4 regional headquarters, 22 area offices, and 22 detachments for investigation and crime prevention, and 2 military correctional facilities. Now, Chair, Honourable Members, the entities that report to the Executive Authority, did indicate the entities that report to the Executive Authority are as follows. AMSCO has mandated to meet the acquisition, maintenance, and disposal needs of the South African Department of Defense, primarily the National Defense Force, and other clients in terms of defense material-related products and services. The second entity that reports to the Executive Authority, the Castle Control Board, to run and manage the Castle of Good Hope and to protect the castle on behalf of the Minister of Defense as the Executive Authority. And then the third one, that is a new one, which started as this financial year comes to a close. That is the National Defense Force Service Commission, for which legislation is underway. And the National Defense Force Service Commission, as members have already been briefed and they appeared before you, their mandate is to investigate, provide expert advice, and make recommendations regarding conditions of service, and then make recommendations to the Executive Authority on the establishment of a permanent National Defense Force Service Commission. Now, in terms of strategic positioning, for the entity that is AMSCO, their positioning is focused on the following: funding and growth, enhancing people capabilities, broad-based economic empowerment, stakeholder relationships, support to local industry, and operational efficiency. In terms of the Castle Control Board, go to the castle. No, I wanted there was some finger trouble. But the Castle Control Board, that is in the other slide, 65, it's not shown there, but basically it outputs the preservation of the military history, maintenance, preservation, and protection of the castle, corporate governance of the castle itself, and then projecting a professional and competent corporate image, and increased public profile and a positive perception across all sectors of the community. That is with respect to the Castle Control Board. And on the National Defense Force Service Commission, interim National Defense Force Service Commission established by Executive Authority during 21st September 2009, correction there, to investigate, provide expert advice, and make recommendations regarding conditions of service, and then recommendations to the Executive Authority, and then detail regarding delivery on these objectives we have spelled out in Appendix C. On our overview of our public-private partnerships, these cut across the respective programs. In the administration program, the public-private partnership is in the human resources sub-program, and that is encapsulated in Project Brilliant. And then the air defense program, the planned public-private partnership is with respect to the utilization of Air Force Base Esterplat here in Cape Town. And then on the maritime defense, the public-private partnership is with respect to Sea Safety Training Center and also the new Navy headquarters as well as the Navy mess. And then on the military health services, clinical service delivery. Now, concluding remarks, Chair, Honourable Members. To conclude, we confirm that the plan as being tabled before you is aligned to the requirements of Regulation 5 of the Treasury Regulations and the regulations to the PFMA, read together with Section 52 of the Public Finance Management Act. We are satisfied that there has been improvement in the quality of the plans, and then also that these are aligned with the current Minister of Defense priorities as well as the Cabinet cluster priorities. And of course, we continue to seek to improve that so that we can be able to improve our performance, monitoring, and evaluation. And then thirdly, we ask and continue to systematically address strategic issues that may pose a threat or enterprise risks, as well as at the same time ensuring full realization of our outputs whilst meeting our ordered commitments. We hope, Honorable Chair members, that through this strategic plan, the first in this administration, in this parliament, fourth parliament, the organs of state, that is ourselves, we will seek to enhance our performance and do better. Chair, Honorable members, that is the strategic plan as indicated. And in terms of the progress made in realizing that priority one of the Minister of Defense priorities, and that is the last slide, to say that the President proclaimed the establishment of the Department of Military Veterans on the 28th of December 2009, that is Proclamation 92, as published in the Government Gazette, and then also it provides that the Department of Military Veterans shall be a standalone department resorting under and reporting to the Minister and Deputy Ministers of Defense and Military Veterans with its own budget vote and its own accounting officer. As we speak, and in the interim, the budget for the 2010-11 is housed within, that is for the new department, is housed in the administration program of the DOD. It is, however, ring-fenced, and the administrative processes that will be underway and early in the new financial year, that is that migration of that budget. And of course, as members already know, that department will be responsible for the overall management and administration of all military veterans affairs, including but not limited to developing policy, legislation, programs, benefits and services that facilitate transition from active service, that is in the Department of Defense, to civilian life. And of course, during the forthcoming financial year, this one as it ends and early in the new one, we'll be putting in place the macro-organizational structure, policies and procedures for the new department. Once we are ready, that new department will, as the Department of Defense is doing, the Department of Military Veterans will also have its strategic plan and have that table before you before the end of the financial year coming, the 2010-11 financial year. Siyabulela. Thank you.
Can I thank you, former Secretary of Defense, for your presentation, and really thank you for that. But also, in the procedure how it works here, we really appreciate all of you officials, but if you have a question or you want to answer, we only take it through the Acting Secretary of Defense. We ignore you when you raise your own hand and want to interfere with us. This is a parliamentary session, and it means it's meant for members of parliament. If you answer, you have to answer through the Acting Secretary of Defense. So you should not think that we are undermining you, but that's how we operate here in parliament. We don't convert you into members of parliament when you arrive here. You're giving explanation to us. Members of parliament, I think quite an extensive briefing has been given to you today based on the strategic plan of the department itself. And I'll give you an opportunity to clarify yourself and take more information from the department itself. The Deputy Minister, as I said, is here to be just as the ears and listening process. But if he does have some comment, I'll give him an opportunity. I must also say to you that so that you don't think it's an end of the process, we have got about 6 legislation that is coming in front of us. Extensively, we will be dealing with the National Defense Force Service Commission. We have not yet taken their current report, Acting Secretary. We are waiting for them. They are running around London and around the world. I don't know which soldiers are there, but they are doing that work there. When they come back, we want them here in Parliament. We know there's only one member left here, but the rest of them are outside the country. So we will be having them in front of us to come and give us an extensive briefing of the work that they have done. But what is coming after that, members, is how they are going to become an institution through legislation. So that legislation is on its path towards Parliament. We'd have to be preparing for that so that you could have different ideas of how the National Service Service Commission is going to work. The one legislation that is on path is the military discipline. We'd have to engage into it very extensively and use the different experiences of different members to come and discuss what type of military discipline that we are talking about. So that legislation is on the way itself. I also want to say to you that part of the legislation that is coming is the military veterans itself. That how is it going to be constituted as a department and what is it and how is it going to function. That legislation is on the way itself, and I'm waiting. What it says, it will be here in May. So we'll have to finish it by July. But that legislation is on its part. There are amendments to the defense amendment that are going to be suggested by the ministry. And they are also on the road. They were supposed to have arrived in February so that it should have finished by April, but they have not yet arrived in Parliament. And then there is your Geneva Convention that would have to work out. They are going to be brought in front of us, and we'll have to look into them and take decisions. Why I'm alerting you, members, before we start discussing is because I want you to keep it at the back of your mind that an extensive discussion is still going to take place in relation to establishment of some of the institutions. But the opportunity is yours for you to reflect on the strat plan itself. If you are satisfied, not satisfied, but you have an opportunity to express your own point of views. But we handle them in a very disciplined manner where we inter-exchange and give each other ideas on what is happening. Where do I start today? Who's number one? I've got Mr. Mlambo here. Oh, you're just pointing at me. Oh, you just like me.
I'm proposing a break, a 10-minute break.
Mlambo feels hungry and proposing a break. Be patient, David. There's a proposal for a 10-minute break. What are you saying, Tatu Mlambo?
Oh, yes, I want to have a small break.
Okay, don't stand up, Dr. Mlangen. This is a meeting. This is not a branch meeting of the party here. Can you just be patient? Dr. Undovu, what are you saying?
I think 5 minutes will be fine.
5 minutes will be fine. Members, let me give you a break of stretching and doing everything, and you come back again so that you can start. David, have your questions outlined. I'll give you an opportunity to ask all your questions. Don't be reluctant not to ask your questions. Are they 10? You ask them as 10. Please. Eh? I want 10. Take a break, members. And make the members aware of what they have come across. But it doesn't take away the natural approach of members asking their own questions out of their own experiences and what they have listened to. But those questions are really to try and assist in what the research units have identified. But they don't stick to that. You can ask any question that you want. It's not that I'm like, you know, running like a small dictator saying that you ask what I want. No, no, no. There's a democratic process here where you've got an opportunity to ask from whatever side. But those questions is really to continuously trying to help members, you see. Because when the report came only yesterday, I asked the research unit to do its best to see what is it can pull out of the report to assist members themselves. But you are at liberty to ask as many questions from whichever angle you want to do that. It's your democratic right. I can't really try to manage you from there. I'll ask the department to take as much as you can and help each other to take the questions, but I have to leave the members to really reflect on some of these things. Can I give you, David, to start the process?
Thank you, Chair. I really, and if you'd give me some advice, I'd like to try to do three things. The first is I would like to ask the through you questions of a clarification in respect of General Matanzima's appointment. The second is I would like to make an argument about why it is I think that this strategic business plan should, and let me put this delicately, be substantially reviewed. And thirdly, I'd like to ask a set of questions of clarification. Now, through you, Chair, you could give me some guidance about what you'd like me to take first.
You see, on the first one, I'm not sure exactly because we're dealing with the strat plan. You see, we're not dealing with the appointments of people today. You see, so I wanted us to take that one off the line and focus on the strat plan itself. And you see, the appointments are done by the minister. They're not done by General Matanzima himself or the former acting Secretary of Defense. So I don't want to drag them into this matter. I can't allow a situation where people subjectively talk about themselves. It's not here or there. And I don't want to put the Deputy Minister on spot around that particular arrangement because I am aware that the appointment is done by the minister. So we need to keep that out of this circle. We have to deal with that when we are engaging the minister herself. The rest of the other approaches that you're taking, I've got no problems. You could raise your points. But let's take the issue of the Secretary of Defense out of the pictures of now, if you agree. Thank you. Because you see, if you ask me, I don't appoint you. I don't appoint anybody. So I don't want to enter into a debate on what to read and speculate about. We want to get a direct answer about your concerns if the minister is around, if you don't mind.
Okay. Chair, the fact is I disagree, but I do respect your ruling, and so I'll move on to the second two items. Let me start then with an argument about why I think the strategic business plan should be substantially reviewed and frankly rejected by this committee. The first point, and it goes about 3 points, Chair. First, this is a strategic business plan that has been developed in a policy vacuum. That's the first point, and I'll talk to that. The second point is, I mean, the question is, does the strategic business plan provide a coherent plan to achieve objectives? And I don't think that it does. It's also, from an oversight perspective, not a very useful document. Let me take the first point then about the policy. Chair, I don't understand how it's possible that we have a strategic business plan without an amended defense policy. Now, the question of the defense update does not seem to be addressed in this plan. There is reference to a white paper on the defense industry. There seems to be no reference to a green paper on defense policy. There is reference to a defense strategy, a document to be tabled by October 2010, but that is not the same as a green paper. So we have a strategic business plan being created inside a policy vacuum. That's the first thing. The second thing is does this strategic business plan provide a coherent plan to achieve certain objectives? And I'll tell you why I think that's not the case. First, the objectives in the document, there are no clear objectives in the document. In many cases, the objectives are quite general in nature, and in some the objectives are not integrated. So, for example, in the draft document which I've read, you have defense objectives on page 8 and 9, military objectives on page 14 and 15, government objectives on page 21 and 22, and ministerial objectives on page 23 and 24. And it seems to me that they're not properly integrated into a clear set of defense and military objectives. So, for example, you would have a government objective, all people in South Africa must be safe and feel safe. That's translated quite correctly into an output, border management. That output is not translated into the military strategic objectives, but it does appear in the business plan. And so it seems to me that the first part of the problem is that there are not clear objectives in the document. The second part is if you look at some of the objectives that are set out, there is no plan to achieve those objectives. Let me give you an example. A ministerial objective, the transformation of Arms Corps, or the refocusing of Denel. Doesn't seem to me that either of those there doesn't seem to be a plan to achieve those objectives in this document. And then, most importantly, Chair, it doesn't seem that the outcomes are often measurable. And I'll use an example, forced employment. If you look at the performance indicators for Operation Corona, the performance indicator is percentage compliance with approved border safeguarding tasks. That, frankly, is meaningless. It's not adequately defined, it can't be operationalized, and therefore it can't be measured. And this is not difficult, Chair. It would seem to me that the outcome would be safe borders. The outputs could include, for example, outputs like interdicting stolen vehicles, interdicting, for example, illegal fishing boats, air reconnaissance spotting illegal fishing boats. Those are the outputs. Activities, for example, would be border patrols, maritime patrols, air patrols, and all those can be measured in terms of number of soldiers, number of seagoing hours, number of flying hours on those programs, and that does not appear. So there are not a coherent set of objectives, there is not a plan to achieve those objectives, and there's often not a plan to properly measure those objectives. And Chair, from an oversight point of view, I mean, we have, as a committee, have to ask ourselves, will this business plan achieve the objectives of the department? I mean, the most clear objectives are the military objectives. And the evidence is that, in fact, this plan will not achieve those objectives. Two examples, Chair. Maritime defense. It seems to me in this financial year that we budget 10,000 seagoing hours for maritime defense and for maritime patrol. Now, just using very rough and approximate figures, given the business plan, they look like 18 seagoing platforms in the Navy. If you do some rough calculations, that would mean on average, every seagoing platform would spend 23 days at sea and 328 days alongside. If you took a more realistic number, 8 ships, 52 days at sea and 299 days alongside. Air defense, Chair, 550 flying hours for our combat capability. Now, if you take 11 Gripens, at 550 hours, that means that each plane is flying about 50 hours. That's less than half the number of required hours for those aircraft to at least be NATO compliant and operational. And most of those hours, Chair, will be flown during the World Cup. It means the Gripens will be in the hangar, it seems to me, from July through to the end of the financial year. Then even worse, Chair, if you look in the 2012-2013 financial year when we should probably have 26 Gripens, those Gripens with 250 flying hours attached to them will be flying 9.6 hours per aircraft. There's absolutely no ways that this business plan can achieve the objectives of defense, of regional security and support to the people. And then the question for us, Chair, is does this plan allow our committee to hold the Department of Defense accountable? And if you look at my example of Operation Corona, where the outputs are just simply not measurable, there's no way that our committee can actually hold the Department of Defense accountable. I mean, if the Department of Defense deploy onto the borders, then the outputs we as a committee need to be able to scrutinize would be, did the Defense Force, in fact, manage to interdict stolen vehicles, to stop illegal fishing boats? That is the only way that we as a committee would be able to hold the Department of Defense accountable. Chair, and it's for those three reasons that I think that we should consider rejecting the document and asking the department to go back to the drawing board and to substantially review the strategic business plan for 2010-2011. Chair, then my questions.
No, I thought that you're finished.
No, I'd like to ask some questions of clarification. I can do it.
Can you do it later then?
Thank you, Chair.
Now put one point here. I want to give other members also an opportunity. Can I give you Wabundrogo?
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. I may be taking a different point of view
yes.
to my neighbor on the right-hand side. the way he has spoken about it. I was thinking that when anybody presents a document in front of you, the first thing you do is to ask the clarification in the document and take it from there, and then you measure yourself that is it feasible or not. I thought that was the first step. I thought we were opening for that. If we are opening for rejection and acceptance, that's another matter. But I thought that this document is presented today for the first time. And I think when the document is presented to you for the first time, the presenter has to clarify some issues that you have in the document. That's the first step that I think it should be followed. And secondly, you measure his response or her response from what you think should be the output of it before you come to the conclusion. Now, that is why I'm saying it seems as if we little differ on the way I understand the position he's taking and my position I'm taking. Because I thought that it will be easy if we say, okay, let's go to slide number so and so. What are you talking about? Let's go to slide number so and so. What are you talking about? And so on and so forth. I thought we were going to do that. And then thereafter, we see what is happening at the end. Now, we are putting the cart before the horse. As far as the wood says, Konyos and Rashidi.
Babundu. No, I'm not opening a debate on what that's all on the show. I allowed the member to do his own presentation. And I thought that you are privileged to raise your own. I didn't say let's debate that issue. I have not said that all. I allowed him to express his own point of view with the hope that members, after they have listened, they will reflect in the particular approach that they are taking. You have outlined your approach, but I'm giving you an opportunity to raise questions in relation to the document itself. I mean, you see, it's a democratic process. I can't kill a member when he's talking. I'm giving him an opportunity to express as much as he likes. But you are also members, you are also adults. You listen to what is it, and you have used your experience to be able to guide the process itself. But where I'm standing is that I want a response on what is exactly in front of us. But what the member is saying, I don't think it's what we're going to, unless it gets support and some people are asking us to take that particular pattern of approach. But at this particular moment, I'm giving each and every member to express this from any other direction that it's coming from. I'll give guidance when it comes to when members have already done their own expressions. Is that okay, Babundo?
No, it's fine.
Do you have some questions?
Well, I do have some questions on the document, but I think we were dealing with the fourth provision that he has taken.
Yeah.
Which I thought you asked.
I'm reemphasizing that I've not opened that for a discussion. I have given you a privilege to express your own point of views on what, in the manner you have worked out. So I'm listening to you. That what do you have questions that are dealing with the question? So let's go that route. Because he also has got some questions still to ask. That question will only arise when you finish this particular process, if ever it's a question that needs some answers. But I'm allowing members to look into the document, raise their concerns, and we move on in that particular way.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. No, Chairperson, on slide number 17, it's talk about skills and human resources. I wonder if the presenter can elaborate on that. That is Chapter 2, Medium-Term Strategy Forecast. That's slide number. I just want that to be clarified so that I'll understand it clearly, what are you really talking about. And again, in slide number 18, you talk about the white paper, defense white paper. Which one? There are so many defense white papers. Which one are you referring to? It will be very good for me to understand which one, where are you coming from, and where are you going, and the time frame for that defense white paper you are talking about, and so on. And the last one is only this first round. It's slide number 22, alignment with MTSF. Compliance with a protocol and ensure sustainable environment management. What is that? If you can elaborate more on that so that I may understand exactly. I may be in the same position as you in understanding exactly what you are talking about. So that when I'm talking about these things, I know exactly what I'm talking about. Those are the three questions that I want to raise, Chairperson. And I'm laying a baseline that it will be very good if members ask three questions first.
I'm going to give Mamam Kabate, then I've got to Tatu Kekan after Mamam Kabate. If you have noted to help Tatu Kekan, who are Katazek? Yeah.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the department. The thickness of this document shows that you have tried hard to put something down. We'll remain on our own and do exactly what the Chair is talking about. But I want to thank you guys. But when you look at chapter 2, I won't say the pages because they differ. But I think this one is page 16. Chapter 2, medium term strategic focus. The DOD alignment needs to give substance to the following, and then you mentioned all of them. Maybe just like Wabundov. I know that even though it is a plan, strategic plan, but within the context of FNDF as a unique service, how are you going to, will these needs really articulate to the uniqueness of FNDF, or we just went to what MTSF is saying? I'm asking this question because it will create a problem when we do oversight. Having been given by you all these bullets, and on the ground you don't find any of these bullets, so I want have to clarify that because we're dealing with the same thing. We're overseeing your department. We can't let you go without us raising these things. That's my question one. My question two is also strategic priority number three. We're talking about rural land development, and then the alignment to MTSF again. You are saying finalization of pending land claims, land restitution. I would like more explanation when it comes to that land. Because when I visit Agriculture Portfolio Committee, they also talk about finalization of these land claims. So what is the difference between this finalization and the agriculture and the land and the environment? Bamdov said, let's talk three times only. So my third and last one.
Let me correct you, Mamundo. Bamdov is not sharing.
But it didn't negate it.
No, I didn't want to object to you.
Okay.
We have an agreement that he's a traditional leader, so I don't have to object.
Thank you, Chair. I'm losing the page, but it's a page that is talking about AMSCO. And it says it provides, page 62 in this one, entities that report to the executive. First bullet, it talks about AMSCO, defense, and other clients in terms of the defense material. If it's allowed to hear those other clients, I would like it. I would like to hear that because we are defended by South African National Defense Force. Which other clients are they producing for? And within the nature of our defense force, are we safe? Are those other clients not going to be a threat? What is the story about these other clients? Thank you.
You have already said on the commission we're going to have a more comprehensive report. I'm willing to wait for that. I've got just two questions. Let me also say that on the strategic plan, I'm also happy that it highlights priorities. But the detail, for example, the performance system, how that is going to be implemented, I'm sure that will be done by different departments, different sections of the military, because that is more of a detailed thing.
you can imagine is that it has to be included there in the strategic plan. We'll have a Bible to read now. Chair, my question is, the skills that we're losing in the Army, I mean, with the civilian, we know engineers would go overseas. Do we know where they are going? Secondly, do we have a time frame for that commission? Because otherwise, these commissions go on forever if you don't give a time frame. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. On slide 15, you talk of the minister's priorities and then you list your works regiment of the department. If I can get the current status, because when I went through your document, there was something that was written that you are moving towards the establishment of it, and then in your previous reports, I recall clearly what it you once reported that it was up and running. Then if I can get the current status. And secondly, you also talk of government priorities, the alignment with government priorities. I know in the President's State of the Nation address, he highlighted few focus areas for the defense. Amongst those was the emphasis on the monitoring and evaluation part of your operations or in other departments. But then, as I go through the document, and as I understand the same question that arose from the previous Honorable Manier, that the defense review, which is supposed to give direction to the implementation of the objectives and all those, has not been presented to us. How do we then plan and monitor that without having that clear review in front of us? Thank you. Or else, if it's there, you can tell me. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. Comrade Chairperson is a rural man, you know, for 62 years on one place, a rural place. The Deputy Minister, he knows what I'm talking about. Now, on this presentation, talking about rural development and the land reform, you know, as a rural man, when I'm seeing this rural, then I'm starting to understand the development and the rural area, because it's a problem. And, well, of course, in the rural area, we don't even know. You know, we just look in TV where we see army. Don't even know the base of army and all those things. But now I just find out what kind of development and land reform can help us in rural areas. And second question, Comrade Chairperson, and what exactly is the South African National Defence Force contribution to the 2010 FIFA World Cup? Thanks very much.
I'll give both of you.
Do I start? Or?
You see, I want to first start with those that have not asked, because both you and David Manier are going to come back. Can I give the two? Can I start with the Tatum Lambo?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Mine will be clarity. Second question on slide 15 on the transformation of Arms Corps to be in line with the defense mandate. What is the current status in terms of this mandate? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on slide number 25, number 26, on the final letter of allocation, we do know that last year the defense was integrated, we've got a new LEC, military and veterans.
I think this is a big challenge that we are having. There was last year in 2009, there were no allocation for them. They were just getting some few allocation from any subdirectorate. But now my concern, when I see now this allocation, I see a 20 million. Is it enough, or is, I just want to check, it's my concern that I'm raising. Is this 20 million for 2010 and 2011? And the 2011 to 12, 30 million, 2012 and 13, 30 million. Is it enough for this new department? As we know that there are a lot of issues that they must address, the housing, medical aid of this military and veterans. Thank you, Chairperson.
Start with you, David.
Thank you, Chair. Let me begin by a comment, Mark, the Honourable Member of the Opposition to the Opposition sitting to my left. I can't help notice, but there seems to be a creeping coup taking place, as he seems to be wanting to advise you on how to chair these meetings. I make that comment to him. In jest.
David, can you remain focused? You see here, I'm an African boy, so he's a traditional leader. I don't look to him in politics. I know when to do that. But I do give him an opportunity. He's got a democratic right to address issues.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask my question. Chair, if we could turn to page 23 of the document, which is probably not the same.
Excuse me, Chairperson. What politically, what does that mean? What does that mean, sweeping Q? What does that mean here in Africa? What does it mean?
I'll give you and him an opportunity to engage us. As of now, I just want us to remain focused.
Thank you, Chair. If we come to the Minister of Defence's priorities, which are on page 23 of my document, but probably not page 23 of the document circulated this morning, I would like some clarity on exactly what we mean by the alignment of the Defence Secretariat with its constitutional and legislative mandate. It's not clear what that means and what the implications could be for effective civilian control of the military. Equally, it's not clear to me what transformation of arms corps means or the refocusing of DNEL. So if we could please clarify exactly what those ministerial priorities mean. Then, Chair, I would like some clarity on the question of, and we've mentioned this, on the defense update. Will we be receiving a green paper this year? If so, when? Because as we all know, this document has been rolled over year in and year out, and if you look at the estimates of expenditure this year, it's cost literally millions of rands to produce, and yet we've never seen it. If we come to the Department of Military Veterans, I'd like some clarity about the formation of the Department of Military Veterans. If you look at the slide, the department was set up by proclamation on the 28th of December 2009. It was done so without, so far as I'm aware, any consultation with Parliament. It was also done in a way that preempted the report of the Deputy Minister's task team on military veterans, which I understand only produced its or referred its report to the Minister possibly in January or February, so it preempted the findings of that committee, and I would like some clarity about how it is that that happened. Then if we come to the budget allocation, I think it's important, Chair, that we, this is page 24, or I think slide 24. The Department of Defense put in a request for additional funding. Some of that was approved, much of it was not approved, and I think we should drill down into exactly what the department required. So I would want an explanation of exactly what did we want to spend 543,000 on, for example, in respect of landward defense, and how much of that was approved, and what are the consequences for military preparedness. I mean, I'll make the point, Chair. If we needed to procure critical ammunition, I'd want to know what that critical ammunition is, whether the budget to procure that ammunition was approved, and if it wasn't, what are the consequences for military preparedness? Then on the air defense program, this is just a fact, how many flying hours have been budgeted for combat support? That's for the Hawks program. Chair, the optimal number of hours, my understanding, would be 4,000 hours. If they are less than that, we've got a problem. Then on slide, I think, 35, on the Defense Intelligence Program, there's reference to increased budget, an increase in expenditure because of investment in a strategic collection capability. What exactly is that strategic collection capability? And then finally, there's the question of acquisition, Chair. We've looked at operations, for example, flying hours and seagoing hours, but what about acquisition? I'd like to know what the exactly, on the scamp, what programs have been prioritized, what we are acquiring, what how much it's going to cost, and what programs were deprioritized as a result of A, the increase in salaries, and B, the additional funding for various programs being turned down. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Again, going back to what the President said in his State of the Nation address, he also spoke of the promotion of the African agenda. Now, looking into the document, I read that you have decided this financial year to reduce the number of the soldiers that you deploy to those countries, UN and AU. You have decided to reduce it about 1,000 and something. If I can get a clarity on that, how is that going to impact on what the President has identified as a priority for the country? Secondly, the President also spoke of borderline control. Are we as the Department ready for that? Do we have enough personnel to undertake that mandate? The other one, the time frames of the establishment of the Permanent Defense Commission and the budget that is attached to that and the structure, if we can get that. Also, AMCO, your parastatal, I understand, is also trying to pursue the route of skills development. Can you tell us how does this going to assist in the emphasis again that the President made that all departments must contribute to the, especially the skills development amongst the young people, but not forgetting those, the older generation that is there in the department. How do we then plan to phase them out? What capabilities and skills that we can impact? Thank you, Chair.
So you are not introducing the NT youth league when you talk about young people.
No,
okay. Can I give over? Dr. Mpahla, do you have anything? Okay. You want to come back, both of you? Because I want to give that tip. I'll start with that. Oh, no, I understand. Short and long is the democratic right. I'm protecting you. Can I start with you, Tata? And then I'll give Mamu Mkabate.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question relates to clean audits. I just want to ask the department whether they regard having a clean audit as an objective, because it is absent in the objectives here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It's just one small, but it might be here even later. On my page 37, on the mitigation strategy action, a unique service dispensation for FNDF outside the ambit of the public service. That's what they are saying because of the commission, which is fine. But on the second page, under mitigation strategy action, they are saying, wanted to immediately establish bilateral planning between, immediately establish between DPW and DOD. There is a contradiction. if the commission is coming up with this proposal, which comes because of some number of reasons, why would you be establishing these plannings with DPW? I expected to see establishing exit, something like that. You can answer it today or you can go back, but there is a contradiction. Thank you.
Your answer is today, Mamun Kabade. They won't go away without answering you. Katu Tolo, the rural boy.
Hey. 62 years till now. And I'm going to die there. I'm still going to on bush for toilet. And Comrade Jefferson, I just found out what is the progress with appointment of a chief financial officer? And the second question, Comrade Jefferson, is that what is the latest from Airbus A400M regarding the cancellation of the contract, especially with regard to the Tinel sub aerostructure control with Airbus? Thank you very much.
The latter speaker covered me, but only one thing that I can add. I want to understand if the department has the HIV policy that exists. Thank you.
I wanted to clear all the members and make them very happy. And I can see you've resolved your matters with the starting group over there. You come back. Do you have any questions? You don't. Thank you.
I'm anxious for the answers, Jay.
Oh, that's very good. You see, don't be intimidated by this fellow. I'm around today. Babu Matanzim, we'll give over to you and your delegation to answer.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. As indicated, we will share this session. There are specialists behind me who will deal with some of the questions. But first, I would like to give it to Mr. Mutume.
Is it not General Mutume? You don't get... Oh.
I would like to give it to DG, for military veterans. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chair. The first question, which relates to, let me start with the questions asked by Mr. Honorable Member Ndlovu, with respect to the need to interrogate the strategic business plan and then have the responses there too. The matter of the question on slide number 17, that slide, can we go to slide 17? Speaks to alignment of DOD to the medium-term strategic focus. And if I understood the question, the Honorable Member wanted to understand the skills and human resource base. Yes, what is outlined in the medium-term strategic framework with respect to that priority? On the skills and human resource base, We are giving substance to that in terms of a retention strategy, some of the elements that we've answered in other parts, that we've dealt with in other parts of the strategic plan, ensuring that our skills base meets our requirement, also to ensuring that we have in place a retention strategy, which is there in place, also focusing on targeted recruitment so that our skills and human resource base meets with the requirements that we have. So that would be how we are then, in practical terms, insofar as meeting or aligning with that medium-term strategic priority is concerned, how we are then dealing with that as the defense establishment. On the question of the reference to the defense white paper, and which is it that it's being referred to, in the document, the white paper we're talking about is the white paper on the defense industry, which we plan to bring forth in the forthcoming period, having had one previously. So it is that which we are addressing here specifically when we're referring to the white paper, which is the defense industry white paper. On the question on slide 22, on the MTSF alignment, that would be the one on number 10. On strategic priority number 9, okay, ensuring compliance with the National Environmental Management Act. We have a huge portfolio of land and facilities. And in fact, in terms of ensuring that compliance with the National Environmental Management Act, we have established, and it's been in place for years now, a whole directorate on facilities and a sub-directorate that is dealing specifically with the environment, basically to ensure that whatever projects we undertake are environmentally friendly. And we actually even have policies that have been promulgated to ensure that we act in compliance with not only the National Environmental Management Act, but also the applicable protocols we are referring to here would also be bilateral agreements that we have on environmental management. For instance, we have an agreement and a program with the U.S. Defense Department specifically on environmental management in the military. And then that program has been running for quite some time now. So that is what we meant there in terms of that strategy priority number 9 and how we are then ensuring compliance with the NEM. The question by Honorable Member Mkabateli on the MTSF alignment and priorities. And how. Honorable members will see that in the way we've captured the strategic priorities, we have at the same time on the other block, which is how the DoD aligns to the strategic priorities, sought to unpack a per priority. How are we then, in concrete terms, dealing with alignment of the department to the specific priorities. Hence, we've sought to address each one of the 10 priorities that are applicable across government, but to then say, insofar as defense is concerned, how would we then be able to do that? Cognizant, of course, of the fact that in some of the priorities, there are other lead departments or ministries or entities of state, but ourselves as defense, how would we then find a practical realization of that? Of course, it won't be the same. There may be emphasis on others and more emphasis on others and less on some of the other priorities insofar as the defense mandate is concerned. But all in all, we are aligning and aligned to most of the priorities as indicated there. And that moves me to the issue of the finalization of the land claims. That strategic priority number 3, on comprehensive rural land development strategy linked to land and agrarian reform. We are saying that in instances where there have been land claims, and there are those instances, land claims on land that is occupied by defense, that we bring finality to those. There are specific cases where we have actually already handed back some of the land in certain cases. Those are matters that are still undergoing discussions with land claims commissioners and so on. In some instances, also negotiating that we rather keep the land and then there is a payback to some of the communities that then use those lands. On the matter of the entities that report to the executive authority on AMSCO specifically, who the other clients are. The other clients referred to here are, for instance, outside of defense specific, would be the police. The South African police do use the services of AMSCO, and then also other countries do use the services of AMSCO. In fact, as we, one of the mandates that AMSCO has, and as you'll see, they also includes disposal, disposal of some of our excess or obsolete equipment. As we decommission some of the equipment that we have, AMSCO then takes over the responsibility for the disposal of that and thereby and some revenue into for the defense establishment. So that is the other clients other than ourselves, because some of it may actually also be disposed to other non-South African entities and so on. Of course, all within a regulated or regulatory environment. The question by Honorable Member Kekana in terms of the loss of skills and where, I can ask colleagues in human resources to give the detail of that. But briefly to say that, yes, the loss of skills, we're losing skills to South African industry, other state entities, and also to outside the country, to overseas. So it's wide-ranging, and it's in different areas within the defense establishment. Whether we're talking about the Air Force, or we're talking about the maritime program, or we're talking about just the whole range of military health support program and so on. And it's within that context that part of the mitigating factors that we've put in place has been to introduce a specific incentives for retention of the members, especially in those areas where we have the scarce skills, also to align or look at what the overall government occupation specific dispensation is doing and then be part of that. We're involved also in that process so that our members also benefit from that. And then most importantly, with the introduction of the commission will also has that mandate to look at then how can we address the conditions of service, because sometimes that is also part of the reason for the loss of the skills. Acting Sec, should I hand over to you? On the works regiment monitoring and evaluation. On the works regiment. Okay.
But to me, okay. On the defense review or the defense update, you are more experienced. Can you give us a sense? What is it that is going on there?
Chair, on the defense update, that will be brought before the committee once the minister has finalized that, recalling that this started before the current administration. So the minister has had to satisfy herself that whatever will be brought to the committee will be something that is implementable during this term of parliament, also during the term of this particular administration.
But we know that story.
It's not a story, sir.
We've been told before that the minister is going to read this thing and bring it, and it's been going on for some time. What the members' concerns are, when you're outlining policy, where do we derive policy from? Because the defense update is supposed to be informing that. What does it imply? Just give an example, what is it that is going to happen? Because the minister will be waiting, and you see, it's not on the parliamentary program. So it's important to inform members when and where will they ever have this type of defense update. Is it in existence or not?
Thank you, Jefferson. I think to second you on that understanding, it will be advisable if the DG give us a time frame on the matter. Because, you see, when we are talking about when the minister is ready, and we don't know, it may be ready in 2014, you see, we never know. We must work on the time frame and so on, so that we understand exactly where we are. And so on. I'm trying to I'm trying to support what you are thinking of, the way it's been focused, so that we get the output correctly at the end of the day.
Chair, I just wanted to, this has been going on for 9 months. We've heard the story meeting after meeting after meeting. We need a green paper on defense, and we need it now. And what worries me is that the secretary used the term, the minister needs to ensure that it's implementable. I mean, if we're going to go through a full white paper and defense review process, we actually have to start from first principles. And then we're going to have to look at our environment, we're going to have to look at the threats, we're going to have to look at the consequent force design, we're going to have to look at different models of force design and different costs. We cannot be presented with a fait accompli. The white paper or the green paper is a process. This is very frustrating, Chair.
No, let it not be frustrating. We are presenting it to the officials now. It's very clear that we need to get an answer from the minister. You see, why to me we are raising this thing? It's important. You see, we are going to deal with the money bill now. And as we are going to train ourselves and understand the money bill, we need to be able to be in a position to say to Parliament, you do need extra resources. So it means in our own preparations for the money bill, we need to be able to understand your policies. Now, I understand when members are concerned, because if you deal with the commission became out of spontaneity. It is going to become now a legislation. It's not informed by policy. And that becomes a problem in how you prepare yourself. Now, if you want members to give a lot of solid support behind the department, they need to be able to have an elaborate document that says this is the policies of the department itself. You see? And that's where the hiccup comes in. Because even with how the ministers work out their priorities, it doesn't tell us where does those priorities fit in within the whole institution that she's spearheading. That's why the defense update is a very crucial document that we need to be able to have it in front of us. Now, if it doesn't have time for it, they're asking us to go into legislation and start preparing for that type of legislation. What informs all these developments within the defense department? You see, if you say to us in the arms industry, you want arms code to be updated or arms code to be helped and want denial, what informs the department? I understand where members are coming from, that it's important for them not to work on some sucking in how they work with the department. They want to be guaranteed that as they engage with the department, there are policies that are protecting them. You see? Even with the issue of the military veterans. Since the president pronounced, what impact is it going to have within the white paper or with the defense update? We don't hear. And it's important that we get these things from you. That's why you are saying, is there certainty that when will the minister finish reading? So as it looks as if it's around the reading of the minister. So that all the things that the nice things that are giving us, we know which policy arrangement that you are applying yourself to, you see. That's the challenge. That's why I'm saying that, are you certain when are we going to get this policy arrangement? But if you can answer it, let us admit that you can't answer it, and maybe if you look at the deputy minister next to me would want to take it on. Okay. Do you want to speak first? Okay, that's all right.
Please, Chair, maybe the deputy minister might then encompass the follow-up on the arms. It's even horrifying me now, because they are saying here transformation of arms got to be in line with defense mandate. And again, arms have got other services. With subs, I can understand. I would understand only if SNDF, they do sit down with subs and then agree on this transformation. But my fear is about these other countries. So if SNDF just transform AMSCO, and AMSCO is providing services to other countries, are those other countries
subject of our own South African national defense, how to transform a thing that is not yours. It's serving so many compartments. So if they can clarify whether they do sit and say in our bedroom compartment as SNDF, maybe in subs because we are South African, that's how one arm's got to be transformed. And it leaves a lot of some hang-ups. Thanks.
I'll tell you before the Deputy Minister why I agree with you completely, Mkabate. You see, if you deal with peacekeeping missions and then the defense force of Rwanda or the defense force of the DRC is not strong, we use our resources to go there, you see. And it becomes a market for the arms industry, you see. Now, it's more important that policies speak to those issues. You see, that what is it that we're talking about? But if ever there's a continuous going to peacekeeping and the rebuilding and reconstruction of those countries with no any policy arrangements in place, we will never be able to trace the resources that are getting spent on this type of missions. And you see the imbalance continues, and we are the ones that have to carry the burden of defending the budget that we have in front of us. So it's very much important that we understand these things at an early stage, so that we do know, because nobody talks about peacekeeping missions here in the preparations, and we know for a matter of fact that that is a market if you want to continuously assisting with the developmental state and creation of employment if you deal with the arms industry. But if that sense is not coming around on the basis of what type of policies that have been put into place by the department or by the ministry, it leaves us not being on equal par with what the officials are putting in front of us. You see, and that's where the challenge is, that until we have an update of exactly what policies are we talking about and how does those policies guide all of us, because we're a collective. You see, we're a collective because we work with you. We have to go into Parliament and defend what they are going to present to us. These members have got a responsibility when they go and outline in the budget vote to explain policy, not the nitty-gritties of, because they're not operational, they're policy makers. But if there's no policy that they derive their mandate from, it does create a little bit of a problem in front of the institution, and it weakens them to be able to present their own views in how they see these things, you see. And that is the biggest challenge. That's why the issue of the update is a very crucial matter that is informed. But I'm going to leave the Deputy Minister to speak to this matter, and from there, we'll see what we can do.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Colleagues, what I thought we were going to do was that at the end, we should probably provide some clarity around this matter because of the defense review. Because it is linked with the very first intervention made by Honorable Member Menir when he asserted that there is a policy vacuum. And because of this policy vacuum, the documents before us don't make sense and therefore must be rejected. I thought we'll come back to this question because indeed, I assume that we would want to allow the committee members to draw more information from the department through the questions raised and therefore answers provided. And then from there we can come to the summations of what we make of this whole presentation. But seeing that we are there now, let me just say that I suspect we don't understand things the same. There is no policy vacuum. That's the first statement we must make, and we must make it emphatically. There is no policy vacuum because, and there is no, the committee, the portfolio committee must not expect a white paper from the Ministry on Defense to be coming their way at any time soon. No. Because the white paper is the one that sets policy. And it is not the case and the practice that unless you see you had a new party in government after the elections we had last year, maybe that party would now find the need to come with a new policy with respect to defense, and then it will come with a white paper. But the party that is in government is the party that has been in government for the last 15 years. And it started with a white paper to set up policy, its policy on defense. And that policy on defense is a policy for as long as this party is in government that will remain in place. And that policy is contained in the defense white paper. Not a given that every year we must have a white paper. Because, you see, the white paper spells out the principles, the policy principles of the ruling party with respect to defense. First of all, with respect to the institutional arrangement that we must have, that in defense we'll have the chief of the defense force as the office and the incumbent in charge of operation and control of the defense force, but we'll also have a civilian secretariat that serves to provide policy oversight, to assist the minister to exercise policy oversight over the activities of the defense. That is the policy matter. You'll find it in the white paper, the establishment of the defense secretariat. It was not there before. It was established by the white paper that we had after the elections of 1994. It talks about the point, for instance, among other principles, that defense force will not be internally deployed unless there is a state of there's a way in which it is defined, extraordinary situation where the defense force must be deployed internally. Those are principles that are outlined in the white paper. Now, that policy is there. So there's no policy vacuum. But of course, from time to time, the establishment of defense can always call for a defense review. Defense review is not policy. Defense review is an exercise to establish whether the strategies of the defense force are in keeping and are responding to the environment that keeps on changing. So the defense review, yes, there has been a defense. After the white paper on defense in 1994, the department then started an exercise to conduct a defense review, to review the whole defense establishment of old on the basis of the new policy that the ANC brought in when it came into government. That defense review has, it's among other things, the policy document, strategic document that talks about the core force concept. To say South Africa will not keep the force levels that it has kept prior to 1994. Those force levels must be brought down, but the defense force will be designed in such a manner that it is a force that is kept within a reasonable size as far as the resources that it consumes, but with the capacity to be expanded rapidly should a need arise. Those are issues, they are not in the white paper, you'll find them in the defense review. Now, of course, towards the end of the last administration, there was, for one reason or another, a need for a defense review to be conducted within the environment of defense. And this is the document which we say the minister has to bring here to the portfolio committee. But there's no urgency around the defense review. It's not like if you don't have a defense review, then things are at a standstill. Unless the environment has so critically altered that it makes the things that we are doing nonsensical, then the defense review becomes an urgent matter to be attended to. So I'm just saying, yes, the defense review will come, but let's not understand it as such a big obstacle that we cannot do what we're supposed to do because the defense review has not been finalized. The plans that we are dealing with, these are plans for the next MTS period. They are listed on the basis of the strategic plans of government, on the basis of the ruling party's priorities for the next 5 years, the medium-term strategic objectives of the government, of the ruling party.
these plans originate from there, and their plans, whether the defense review, the defense review comes with a different configuration of the defense force and other things, but these priorities must be of necessity be prosecuted. So, I understand that there is stress in the house, but I'm not so sure whether we should actually be, you know, feeling, you know, encumbered by, you know, the absence of a defense review in front of us and the suggestion that there is no policy. That is what, you know, obtains as far as these issues are concerned. Well, I'll come back later on to the issues raised by Honorable Member Menir that there are no plans to achieve the objectives, but at the same time says there are no objectives. There are no aligned objectives. Yes. You know, it, you know, he'll have to, Honorable Member Menir will have to just go back to the things that he said and clarify himself so that we understand properly what is it that he says is deficient in the document so that we must correct those deficiencies in the document. But in the manner in which he has articulated it, I'm not sure he understood exactly what his gripe is. Thanks.
There is a clarity, members. But what I'm going to do is I'll continue allowing the department to continue answering the questions. This is a substantial matter, and I do think for us here, it does give a lot of clarity about the processes that are confronted with. You see the difficulties also when the old sector was beginning to say the minister is reading. What is the minister reading? You see, yeah. But go ahead. We don't want to debate that. I think the deputy minister has given some clarity.
Chair, if you agree, we go to work regiment. This work regiment will be prepared, is being prepared by Chief of the South African Army for the whole DOD. And there's substantial work that has been done, and the purpose is to use this work regiment to maintain our own properties. The work that has been done in the past by Public Works. But, Chairperson, we have Brigadier General Pelsa from Chief of Logistics who will give more clarity on this matter as far as the state the readiness.
Thank you, Chair. As the General said, we are preparing the works regiment. Currently, it is under the auspices of the Army, but it has been decided that eventually the works regiment will fall under my immediate superior, the Chief of Logistics. The staff officer that is working on that is David Masters, Brigadier General David Masters. They have already completed a complete appreciation of the requirements of a works regiment. They have proposed macro structures. We are also working to integrate that with the proposals of a logistics intervention and repositioning program. In the meantime, they have already trained 450 artisans, meaning bricklayers, plasterers, all other types of artisans such as electricians, etc. They intend to train another 150 every year. And as the General said, the intent is to maintain our own facilities. Our agreement with the Department of Public Works at the moment is that we have the delegation to maintain our facilities to the first and second line, meaning that we may do day-to-day maintenance and also planned maintenance, but not changes to facilities. We do not yet have a delegation, and I think we will eventually grow to have a delegation to maintain also to the third and the fourth line, which means small changes or small works, and also new greenfields projects. Thank you, sir.
If I'm not mistaken, Chairperson, the following question would be from Honorable Member Tolo on FIFA Constitution. I will try to explain what I had. I think the question was our contribution to FIFA World Cup. This is the presentation that we have given to the members. we are deploying members of the Defense Force in the vicinity. In fact, there will be over 7,000 members, both from the Air Force, Navy, Army, SAMS, and other members will be deployed during this period. It is a reasonable number, and we think that we will be able to cover all the security concerns in the area, because we are doing this work with the South African police and other members. So I don't know if the numbers will be okay if we say over 7,000 members. That will include helicopters and aeroplanes from the Air Force. The Navy will be in charge of the maritime environment, and the majority of these people will be coming from the South African Army, and they are ready.
Question that is still going through. No, I just think he has not captured the borderline control question that I have. Angithi Khona manje, you are in charge, so you are dedicating, you are doing everything. Mama Mdabeni, come on, go to Sekhaya, lapha emakhaya, nje. Ngiyakholinda lapha seTranskei wena nje ulungisa wena ungakhathazeki ekhaya. Ndiyazazi into zoba ukhaya benilungisa nothwalisana ngebhatyi. Inkosi le bengayazi le nto kanti bengicaba ngoba bundlovu yedwa inkosi kule ndlu.
I thought this was the only question at this stage from the honorable member. But if we have to cover the going back to borders, again, we gave that presentation, and we indicated, if you allow me to respond to that now, not later.
Allow you, as long as you don't divulge your issues of confidentiality that relate to this matter. Put it in a manner that it does make it for us to understand the issue, but don't go down into the details, because we don't want it to get
to you. Sir President, we are deploying, if that is approved, on the 1st of April this year, back to the borders. We have a company that is in the borders between South Africa and Zimbabwe. A company is something like 120 to 160 members. We are going to add another company in that area to make sure that we cover the whole area from Messina towards the east. And we also are going to deploy forces on the borders between South Africa and Mozambique and Swaziland. We are asking the chief of the South African Army to prepare another battalion. We have enough forces, we think, to cover those borders at the present moment. And the threat analysis that has been given to us indicates to us that if we are actually authorized to deploy this force, we'll be covering everything. In conjunction, of course, at the back with the South African Police Service. I think we have enough members to be deployed there. This may include helicopters, where, depending on the threat at a specific time. It is not always always possible to deploy all your forces, but we'll have a backup system to make sure that we leave no stone unturned, especially the people who continue to steal our vehicles, our livestock, and people who continue to cross the borders without crossing at the designated areas. That is where the Defense Force will be deployed. Thank you, sir.
That is about border lines. That is about border lines. It's not about the port of entry.
The borderline, Chairperson, not the port of entry.
You know, the port of entry is not part of
your... Other people will be dealing with that, Home Affairs and FARS, but we will not be involved in that one. Thank you, Chair. The next one, Chair, I would like to delegate Mr. Antoine Fisset to deal with the Arms Corps, the current status, a question from Mr. Mlam.
Enforcement,
yes.
Legacy forces, that is all.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. In terms of AMSCO actually had two entities, the main AMSCO, and then there was the business, AMSCO business. And there was a lot of questions regarding AMSCO business and what is AMSCO business doing. We had to look into that, and we have found that AMSCO business is not really there for the business. The only place where they really got some money from and where they made a profit was at the stage with the disposal of certain of the equipment. Now, a lot of those equipment have actually now reduced to such a level that they are not economical viable. So they're not really business units. And they have been changed now to AMSCO entities. So they don't carry the name business anymore. But what's important when you look at those entities, you'll find that those entities are critically important for the Department of Defense in the execution of its work. And I'm going to give two examples. The one is Arconpan, and the other one is Gerotech. Both of those are trying to get business outside the department because our budget is not sufficient to maintain them. So they're doing exercises for people outside the country, ammunition exercises at Arconpan, or you find that a lot of the commercial motor companies are using Gerotech for vehicle testing. But we are still needing a place like Gerotech to do specific tests for our vehicles. Plus, we need Gerotech to help us to do some training of our drivers. Therefore, you would find that in our budget, when you go into the detail, you will find that there is a strategic component of that transfer of money where we are giving them what we call a buffer fund to help them to keep sustainable, because government couldn't invest millions. I think Gerotech probably will cost you over 100 million if you want to rebuild it today. You cannot invest in millions into that, and then you just let it die, and tomorrow you don't have the capacity. As far as the AMSCO itself concerned, I can say that we did sign the service level agreement. We are at this moment busy with detailed work to look at all the different cost elements within the AMSCO. In the past, we were a little bit blind for it. I mean, they're getting a transfer payment from the Department of Defense, and they were supposed to provide it to work. But if you ask, but listen, how much of this was allocated to Project Acrobat, for instance, you would find it was not visible. Now we are trying to even go up to that level where we can have visibility of what is the real cost of AMSCO in terms of acquisition process. Because when you go back into the AMSCO mandate, you will find that AMSCO main mandate is to support the acquisition function of the Department of Defense. That's the main function. It's what correctly said by the previous SecDef, or acting SecDef, that yes, they're also helping in certain cases the police, for instance, when they bought the helicopters as a result of the experience. Then if I can go over to the Danel one. Danel is actually at this moment a very interesting case, and I don't want to go into all the details, but I would like to say that the Minister of Public Enterprises, Minister Hogan, is looking at how she can rejuvenate, or how can she turn around the whole Danel environment. We all know that Danel consists of different entities, of which of those are not, and there are some of those that is not economical viable. And government have gave a top of money to try to make it, to recapitalize the Danel at the end of the day. Now, within those, when you look at those, you'll find that PMP, for instance, which is responsible for the production of small caliber ammunition, PMP at the stage was not commercial viable. They have turned it around now and it became commercially viable. How did they do it? It's actually linked also to one of the questions about ammunition. On the one side, they're looking how they can get some foreign markets. On the other hand, we have also have to look where we really have depleted stock. How can we shift money within the Department of Defense to at least have a minimum of order amount? So it is not a subsidy that we give to Danel. We are actually putting orders for those things that is critical for the Department of Defense, but in the same time, helping Danel PMP to get to a break-even point of ordering. Going to the second one, for instance, you can look at the Danel ammunition. Now, Danel, as a result of their recipe contains, was the first one expecting government to give certain recapitalization funds. Okay, thank you. The second one is to look if they can get equity partners to help them, where the equity partners can support them. And the third one is also from the Department of Defense. Now, what is very important, if you look at Danel, they have signed a contract, for instance, with Zeiss Optics, where Zeiss Optics has now 70% of the shares. They also have signed now a contract with Rheinmetall, with Rheinmetall is 51% of the shares, and the NEL has got 49% of the shares. And that's in production of ammunition. Out of that, you could see there's a lot of postings coming up. There are also certain questions. But the bottom line is, Minister Public Enterprises is looking at the NEL from a business viewpoint. So she looks at each of those entities to say, is this economical viable? But when you go to the Department of Defense, there's also another tag to be put around those, and that is not, is economical viable. It's also, how important is it for a strategic element in the defense of this country? At the end of the day, the Minister of Defense is being held accountable for the protection of the integrity of the country. For her to do that, she needs certain companies that must provide her with certain equipment or certain ammunition. She must also have security of supply. And in certain cases, when it's very strategic of nature, you actually want independent of supply. That means you don't want to be responsible from another country to do it. Now, the minister has instructed that we go into this exercise. And there was a few interministerial task teams already being held to start looking into this to see. But let's look at the NEL from two sides. The one is from the public enterprise, that means the economical viability, and the other side is to look at from a strategic environment to say how important are some of these entities. And that process, in the process now, and that is why you picked up that the minister says she's also looking at some of the NEL entities, because that we can determine and come to cabinet and to say to cabinet, but listen, there's certain proposals. I hope I have answered that one. Then the last one was regarding the acquisition one. In terms of the acquisition, I think the first thing that you find is that the budget for the acquisition has reduced substantially as a result of the A400 decision. As far as the A400 concerned, firstly, I would like to say, and this is from Chief Defense Material, I think that was one of the better decisions we have taken as far as the A400 concerned. But going with that, I think it's important that at this moment, the Cabinet Act said to us, stop the A400. We've done it. Arms Corps, and now you must understand the process. Within the governance of acquisition, you find three very major entities in this governance process. So the first entity is the SANDF. That means that is where the need is being determined. Now, the chief SANDF has capability management under him, which resides directly under CJ Ops. And CJ Ops liaises with the planners of the different services to determine exactly what is the priorities for equipment. It's coming back to one of the questions, Chair, that I tried to capture now with the scene. Now, what is very important is that in the Secretariat or in the Chief Defense Material Organization, we are not determining the priorities on behalf of the Chief. The Chief determines his priorities. What does he need? Then you've got the governance process to make sure that this process is trying to follow the best, and that is very much linked with civil oversight. And in that governance process, you would find three levels of committees. The one is the AACB, the Armaments Control Board, then the Armaments Steering Board, and then the Council. The Control Board is being chaired by me, a Chief Defense Material. The SecDef chairs the Steering Board, and the Minister chairs the AEC, or the Armament Council. So no project can proceed if it's a cardinal project. If the Minister didn't approve that project and she's satisfied and comfortable with the way we're going to do it. But then to make sure that this process is clear and above board, there's another element, and that's an element, and that is where the role of Arms Corps comes in. Arms Corps then is a contractual committee that must ensure that the acquisition is done to the best of the department, and they have also got what they got, an Arms Corps Control Board. Now, many people in this transformation wanted to take this Arms Corps and put it also directly onto the minister and actually get rid of the Arms Corps Control Board. We are saying it will be one of the biggest mistakes you can do, because at this moment you find that the Arms Corps Control Board is actually independent of the minister. So if a decision is being made wrongly, then the legal case will be against the Arms Corps Control Board and not directed to the minister. So therefore, it's really important that you have the Arms Corps Control Board to protect the department and the minister in this process. So that is where that whole governance process comes in. Now, going into this process, what we have found, if you look at this camp, there are many people that refer very easily to this camp, which is the CG Capital Acquisition Master Plan. And people look at this camp and come to the table and say, but listen, but this is on this camp. This camp is working up to 2030. So we can all know this is now over 20 years. Government medium strategic framework is working in a 5-year period. And government's medium-term expenditure framework is working in a 3-year period. So in principle, government has actually given money for a three-year period, with the exception of the strategic defense packages where government has taken the responsibility that we will manage these strategic defense packages. Now, in this framework, we'll have then to balance to say, but listen, taking the acceptance of one of the rules that there are, that you can properly work and you can commit government for about 80% in the special defense count of the previous years, working on that baseline, we are saying we expect that we will have more or less the same baseline over the next years, and then we see how we can do the execution of this strategic capital acquisition master plan. But if you're taking all the projects on this strategic capital acquisition master plan, and you will cost all of them, you will find it's not affordable within the budget. And the other thing that's important is to take a cognizance that within the strategic capital acquisition master plan, projects are running through different phases. The first one is you must actually define what you want. Then you must go and you must develop what you want. And then you can only start to acquire or procure what you want. Now, that is exactly the reason why you find that the special defense account has been created to accommodate this process, which is sometimes a very lengthy process. So it is not something I can go and I can buy a computer from the shelf. I don't even know that I'm going to have a computer. I've got something with a certain capability as required by the defense, and then we must go look at the different options. And it's only when you finalize certain studies that you can go into this. Last week we had a very good example where we had to look at certain functional studies to be made in the acquiring of projects in the vicinity, probably say, of offshore patrol vessels. The minister didn't approve to go and buy offshore patrol vessels. What she did approve is a functional study that we can go into the detail to go and study what is necessary if we would like the offshore patrol vessel, and then to come back and then to see exactly where you are. But within that process, there were certain priorities given. And in terms of the strategic plan, Chair, I think what's important to take note today is that as far as the Army is concerned, yes, they do have certain challenges. The one is they must look at certain of their anti-tank capability. And that's why you find that a lot of money at this moment is being spent as far as missiles concerned that is handheld. The second thing that you will find is the Army's got a challenge in terms of certain of their products as far as maneuverability concerns, vehicles. And therefore you find on the horizon projects like the Vistulas or you find projects like the Hoefeisters, of which we are busy with certain developments. That is, you also find that the Army is very much in requirement of the clean water for the people, and you find the project like Project Blazebok, which is quite an expensive project, but is very important. Then you also find that there was a project that has to do with engineering vehicles. And that was shifted to the right due to not available funds. It has been brought back now to buy certain of those vehicles because you know that we are helping now to build bridges in certain areas, and it's also being necessary for support of own bases to be built. So I can say in terms of that, it is very clear. When we're going over to strategic defense packages, I think you can see from our budget.
I really want you to go towards concluding.
Okay.
Because I'll end up not having anybody here. They are getting hungrier now.
Chair, yeah, thank you. Are you comfortable with the answer to this?
Enough information. Honorable members, you know, we won't be able to finish virtually every question and everything that you have raised. Because I'll take it that this is your preliminary discussion that I entered into to get more clarity about the issues. And I know that the department has not offered, has not answered all the questions that they're getting confronted with. We have scheduled, according to the program, for us on the 24th of March to come back and have a discussion around this particular issue of the business strategic plan so that when we go to the budget vote, we would be quite ready to have understood some of the issues that have been reflected upon here. Now, given your time, if it's already 12:45, no, don't be patient. It's already 12:45, you see. I would have loved to give to go to conclusion so that at 1:00 we are out of the venue itself, you see, and give you an opportunity to go and have something to eat. I can't hold you here endlessly. I really appreciate the fact that you would want to ask questions, but I must give you an opportunity also to go and prepare to go into Parliament. So I would really say to you that anyone who's got a really acting sector, I know there are questions that are outstanding. But I just want to check with the members because I don't have much time now. I can't keep them here endless. It's going to be a problem. So I just want to conclude with them that do they accept the fact that there is a program which is going to give them again another opportunity? And on my side, you'd also have gone into the document itself and relook at what is exactly in the document. And then when we come back to quite also more and more prepared and understanding of issues. And then we can conclude on that particular day and go and debate. Our budget vote is taking place on the 4th of May. That's when we're going for the budget vote. So these are all part of the preparation to go there. On the 17th of March, you are also having an opportunity, but this one is to deal with the money bills. We are preparing for that one also. So we'll be having in a workshop. Why I'm raising all these things is to show that there will be quite a lot of preparation so that by the time we all go to the budget vote on the 4th of May, some of the issues that you're concerned about, you would have had opportunity to have gone them through. You would have had an opportunity to go through the documents that are in front of you. I will only give now in due respect to you, SecDef, I'll give an opportunity to our members here to see if they've got anything burning them or urgent that they want to raise. And before we conclude, I would give the Deputy Minister again an opportunity to express himself. So we've got 15 minutes to manage. So if you do a long speech, I'll have to cut you down. Basically, you are going to be keeping members here endlessly. Can I start with Mamum Kabateli? I have Tatu Kekana, I have Tatu Mlangen, I have Undru. I'll take you, David, as the last one. Is that the four people that we have? There's no other person, honorable members, who have wanted to say something. If there's not, then I'm closing my remarks from members, and then I'll give you the honorable deputy minister. Can I give you Mamum Kabateli?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's not a question at all, it's a request. I'm just because there is an opportunity of having the Deputy Minister. I'm requesting that we revisit this issue where I said it's a contradiction because the commission is on. If you come with a plan to say you're establishing working relationship, it will cause some harms and potholes in the process of the commission. I'm just requesting that we put a hold on that one until the end. Thank you.
Chair, would like to see Janelle Armsco being efficient and independent. This thing of buying weapons from oversight, I think we should build our own capacity. The issue of scarce skills being lost and the commission, I've asked the question, what is the time scale? When are we expecting the commission to report back? Because those scarce skills are very important in manufacturing and so on. If it can be answered, please, next time when we come, tell us 6 months, 1 year. Otherwise, we're going to wait like Mr. Neger forever.
Thank you very much, Commander Chairperson. Mine also is not a question, but merely to say that I want to congratulate the two gentlemen, the General and Mtumi, for their new positions in which they are promoted. Congratulations. And secondly, and of course, I wish you all the luck, and I know you'll be successful in your duties, in your functions, performing those positions very well. Secondly, I want to agree with what Ngawadele said very earlier, that it has taken the department a long time, many hours, not just 3, 4, 5 hours, many hours, many days perhaps, many weeks or even months for that matter, to prepare this very thick, informative document. And I don't know for others, but for me, to receive it today and be able to read it, study it, and make a meaningful contribution, it's just out of the question. I'm therefore happy that the arrangement has been made that we should continue to discuss this document in the days in which you have suggested. But to say there's a policy vacuum, and therefore the statement, the document must be rejected, I don't agree with that. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, I tend to agree with my neighbor, the last speaker, about the documents. It's very awkward to have a document now and interrogate it now. And we can talk about the broad issues, but you can't talk about specifics in the document and so on. That is why I contradicted you, Chairperson, when I started by saying there is things that we don't understand in this document. That's the first point. The second point, I tend to agree with you, Chairperson, that we'll have the time frame, we'll have time to read the document, so that when we meet again, we will have the same document, unless they will present another new document. But I will request that when they are presenting a document, Chairperson, they give us time to read the document so that we are able to engage them. Because next time, maybe we won't have another time to engage them. Therefore, if we are coming here unprepared and we get the documents here, it will be awkward for us to engage. And we will seem as if we are conversational, which we don't like to be seen as like, but we are just asking questions for clarity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to respond to the Minister. And I have a question for the Minister. I would like to know, sir, whether you support a strategic business plan that effectively strips out the operating budget for the Defence Force, and whose effect and will be that our ships are going to spend more time alongside than at sea, our aircraft are going to spend more time on the ground than in the air, and our borderline security proposals will mean that there's roughly one soldier deployed every 7.5 kilometres on the border. Because if you do agree, then you're failing the Defence Force, and you're failing the people of South Africa.
You see, David, I'm giving you an opportunity to express yourself on the report, you see. I don't want the conclusion you're arriving at, because I think what the other two members have substantially said is that they want to get the opportunity to reflect on the documentation that they have. And I know that I've not given the department an opportunity to go in and contest the facts that they're putting in front of them. So it will be a little bit of a problem to arrive at such a conclusion, because the department has not really, the people are operational. You see, the hard part of life is that they're a member of parliament now. You are not in the sea, you're not in the Air Force, you're not on the borderline. The people are doing that work virtually every day. And they're the ones who've got a better opinion to express to us as a collective that what is the state of things. So it would be totally incorrect to come to effect to say that the Deputy Minister is failing the people of South Africa. I don't want you to follow that route. What I think the spirit of Parliament should always be is to engage properly and get more clarity and allow us, all of us at the right time, to come to such conclusions. But at this moment, I don't agree with your statement at all, because you don't have information. The people who have the information are the ones that fill the room. But we couldn't give them the opportunity to express those point of views about what is happening. So I would really genuinely and honestly ask you to withdraw that statement, because it's not helping the portfolio committee at this particular moment. Members have expressed themselves very solidly to say that they would have loved to get the opportunity to go there.
But you see, if we are going to turn the portfolio committee into finger pointing, it's not being constructive, you see. I don't want us to work like that. I respect you, and I also want you to respect the institution and everybody that's within that institution, so that if they have not explained themselves, don't accuse them, you see. We have not given them an opportunity to come across and say to us, do they agree with the statement that they're making? Not because there's a fight, it is just that I'm asking from a human side, the point of view, where you're going to give them an opportunity and where they're going to express themselves. But I don't want to open a discussion. If you feel that you have got a correct position, I don't want us to debate it, but fairly speaking, let's give them an opportunity to come and express their point of view. And that's why I'm outlining a process of saying that we will have an opportunity not long ago where they will come back and explain to us that really the time arrangements and the outline the border, do they agree with your statement?
Chair, the fact is I stand by my remark, and the fact is I do have the information, and the information is in the strategic business plan. Let's come back to the question of the total allocation of flying hours for the combat capability. In this financial year, there are 550 hours. And that, as far as I'm concerned, if you assume that the average fighter pilot using a NATO standard would fly 120 hours...
I think the first point you have made your point.
Will be on the ground.
You have made your point.
But, Chair, not one of my questions, other than in respect of the Minister's remark, not one of my questions was answered. I asked the Secretary of Defense, how many hours have been budgeted for the combat support capability? I didn't get an answer to my question.
No. David, I'm saying you're an honorable member of parliament. I'm giving opportunity in answering of questions. And they have not said so that they don't want to answer your questions. They haven't even arrived at the level where they've called down to the number of questions that members are confronted with. That's all I'm saying. And I don't want them to be accused if they don't want to answer. It's our own time arrangement. It's very clear that we have spent a lot of time in the presentation, and we have allowed members to, because we have never given them such an extensive opportunity to present their own understanding about their own work. And I'm saying it's no stage are they saying that they're not going to answer your questions. It's part of the questions that they have to be able to answer. That's all I'm saying. So let's not point fingers at them. Let's acknowledge that we will give them an opportunity. But I also say, while you are standing with your statement, I don't agree with you. I really want us to find a better way of addressing each other when we deal with this type of forums. But because I don't want us to go to and fro, I know you're very young. I mean, you're a very young man here. So I'll engage with you outside this forum. Deputy Minister, I'll give you an opportunity just to reflect on the issue.
Chairperson, very much and very briefly, in view of time, just to say as a starting point that your wisdom that we should consider having another installment to discuss the document is indeed useful, and I think the department will support that. but secondly, also to apologize sincerely to the committee members on behalf of the ministry for having provided the documents not on time enough for members to peruse the information contained in the documents. I sincerely apologize for that, and we will always, strive to improve in that respect.
The whip says that you owe something for the last you must arrange.
Furthermore, just to say, Chair, through you, there is just one detail which I thought I would take advantage of the opportunity given now that I should make remarks to respond to provide information, because yes, it is obviously a very glaring. It's a very glaring, should I say, problematic detail in the document. But earlier on when we started in my open remarks, I said, we grinding the meal, the maize, whilst we having our pot on the fire. And it was with respect to this particular detail that the Honorable Member raised that the budget reflected here under the slide 26. Under slide 26, that deals with additional funds to the baseline of the department. They include the budget for the Department of Military Veterans. Here it says the Office of Military Veterans, but it's the Department of Military Veterans. 20 million in this financial year and 30 million going forward to the outer years of the MTF. It is true that that budget is obviously very meager. But the reason for it is because it's a budget that only speaks to the organization that must be put in place. The department, the budget department, that is the Department of Military Veterans budget, will only be fully established when the policy of benefits that the military veterans must get has been finalized. Because this 20 million and 30 million has not, it really doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of the needs military veterans must be assisted on. And the budget will be way above this. But that is not factored in. That's why, as a sector, for the former acting sector, for say, kept on saying, to be revised, to be revised. It is one such line item that will be revised once the full budget of the benefits and support that military veterans are going to be provided with has been worked out, and the population of that constituency has also been ascertained. I just wanted to respond to that important question that was raised by the Honorable Member. Let me say that the sentiment expressed, Chairperson, by Honorable Member Maynir, I think it's a popular sentiment. It's not that I feel that it is misplaced. To say that, you know, the hours by implications of the budgets we have, the Air Force are going to be flying, the hours that our seamen are going to spend at sea on the basis of the budgets we have may actually in some respects appear ridiculous. But that is not the department. It is not the department. It's not the function of the department. The, you know, matter of fact, when it comes to managerial science, this is the traditionally the origin of managerial science, the defense. Or the military, let me put it that way. The military is originally the originators of management science. If you give them 20 rand, they'll tell you how much with that 20 rand you can buy, how many hours you'll spend in the sky, and how many hours you can spend at sea. They'll simply just, calculate that, and it will be for you to understand the kind of predicament that you find yourself in. Matter of fact, the budget of defense is way below what we would all want to see. There are so many things that we want to see happening, but it is the ministry is happy to have members like Maynir with respect to the concerns that they have, but they must speak to the constituency, they must speak to the citizens of this country to understand that the defense budget needs to be increased. Otherwise, you'll have those few hours spent by our men at sea, our sea security, our maritime security will be poor, air security will be poor, and everything else that we want. It is not the problem of the department, but it is the problem of what the country believes our priorities should be with respect to our usage of the national resources we have. I just wanted to make that point to say, look, you are a friend to the ministry. Thank you very much. We are on board, but direct your fire, please, in the right direction. It's not a problem of the department. Tell the South African public that the budget of defense needs to be increased.
Chairperson, the government administration, it's one administration, but it is very interesting that when you come to look at what happens in individual departments, almost every department has its own culture. And I'm raising the point now in relation to the documents we have, whether the plans are aligned and whether there's adequate information and all of that. It's possible that another template in presenting this report could make the picture clearer to other readers. But almost every department in government, much as it is one administration, they have almost their own template that they have been very comfortable using over a period of time. Matter of fact, this template, I'm also, you know, new to it. I'm also struggling to understand some of the things. I'm used to other templates. But it doesn't make it wrong. It could be that the template is not maybe the best in such things to the extent that it leaves out other details that we'd want to see here. And that is what I think in future meetings, if we want to, you know, to assist the improvement of the information contained here, that we can raise. But please be aware that you know, templates of presenting of these documents in government, they differ from one department to another. But if there are gaps, let's point out where the gaps are. And of course, mindful, of course, of the point that was also raised by Honourable Member Kekana to say that. You are talking about government's biggest department, way above the rest. This is a state within a state. In terms of the detailing of the plans that you are talking, if we wanted to see the details of the Air Force, operations and what to be, if we wanted to see the details of the Navy, of the Landward Force, of SAMS, then as the member was actually, you know, expressing concern, there will be having a document that will be unwieldy and not just not readable. That's one thing that we must take into account. But otherwise, I think we have had, for starters, a good you know, meeting this morning. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, members.
Members, I must really thank you for availing yourself and the way you have handled questions. As I'm saying to all members, really your contribution is valued within the committee itself, and we need to be able to keep it like that. Officials from the department, you can hear the concerns that are being raised by the members of parliament. What I'm really expecting you in the round coming back, I would encourage members of parliament, if they can, to use my office so that I can be able to earlier give some of the concerns and questions that you have over to the Secretary of Defense before that due date on the 24th. So that you can get more answers. But I'm not going to start that session on a clean slate. I've started that the process has already been on. So what I would be expecting from you is that you have read the document, you've got certain concerns, put them on writing, I'll give them over there. So that on the day that we arrive here, we'd expect the new Acting Secretary of Defense to be saying to us, this is so-and-so is going to answer this question, this is what is going to happen. But it doesn't, as I repeat, Mr. Smy, it doesn't take away the fact that you could arrive and have a new question on that particular day. It doesn't take away that privilege. I'm just trying to make sure that you get enough time to get answers to the type of questions that you are raising. But I also want to, again, reemphasize, likely, Deputy Minister, you are here today. You see, we've been trying to get division by division, spend time and talk to them. Would want to talk to the Air Force because it's important that the new members and the older members in the committee, the people have got experience, but it's only when they understand what goes on into the Air Force and they'll be able to understand some of the concerns and questions that David is raising. Would like to have the maritime on its own to engage them. That's why we wanted to conclude the annual report on those bases, that we understand what goes on within the different divisions. It gives us capacity, because it is also good to say people must go and talk to the public, but it's only when they understand what goes on within the defense, you see. So I want to encourage that thing, that think through in your processes within the department. Give us an opportunity to engage the Air Force, because it would be like good for the Air Force to reply for its own about what exactly goes on there. You see, because we can't talk about budget processes or budget difficulties when we don't know exactly what is going on there. You see, Ubabu Ndlovu is a traditional leader. He's never been in the Air Force. He would want to understand properly what goes on there. But, honorable members, I really want to thank you, and officials, we really want to thank you for the giving us as much as information as we'd like. We'd want to continue engaging you in a good spirit. Don't overreact to any other member. He does it within his authority as a member of parliament, and he does get protected by us. But it is important for members of parliament to be a little bit aggressive and be able to ask the necessary questions, because they would want to understand what goes on in the department itself. So understand them within that context. And these are very genuine, honorable members who would want to see to it that the SNDF have an improvement in its budget. But they can't argue when they don't know. You see, that's their point where they're coming from. When they don't know, they can't say much. They live on newspapers, and it's not what I want them to go through. When they read newspapers most of the time about Arms Corps, about any other institution, without them to be briefed by you properly. That's the context of how we'll close it down. And thank you to everybody, and have a good day. Thank you.